Michael James, Evanston hip-hop artist Kwaku Collins, and all their tracks, Mike Boucher. And now, here's your host, a man who just wants to restore to factory settings, Justin Kaufman.
Just tell me what button to push. I push this button and this button, hold it for 8 seconds, and then boom, we're back to nothing. That'll be good for humans. I wonder if you went, if there was humans and you could go back to factory settings, if that would like exclude all body hair. If you like, you just went back and you just were a baby, you start again. Oh, you know, I'm going to start again. Actually, it's interesting you bring that up, and I know why you bring it up, because I'm having, I had a 3-hour battle with restoring to factory settings an iPad today. Yeah. It was a battle that I lost, which just is the classic. I'm becoming more and more of a Luddite as I get older, but I also am just a conspiracy theorist. I'm like, they don't want you to factory set. They might as well flash something that says, oops, sorry, got you. You better buy a new one.
Yeah.
Time to buy a new one. iPad 2's coming out. This doesn't error. Must buy new one. I have a story. I don't want to digress here right at the top of the show, but I've been teaching my son about passwords and this, that, and the other, and he decided that it was important for him on the iPad that we have to password protect it. And he
sure.
had, but then he got really into it, and so every day he was changing the password.
Did you scare him into thinking something?
I didn't. No. I don't even remember. I mean, it was more like it was just saying, I think because, you know, I heard Ro and Anna talking a little bit about how parents use their stuff. I have the iPhone where the thumbprint is on it. And so maybe he's just, you know, I think what happened is he discovered that you could do it.
Yeah.
And then he became like, this is mine. Now this iPad is mine. He's 8 years old. It's just mine.
Yeah.
So flash forward to this weekend when he's like, Dad, I can't remember the password. And I was like, what do you mean you can't remember that? Like, it was foreign to me. I'm like, what do you mean? What was it? Like, what are you thinking? Like, is your birthday? What is it? No, I just did it random. It's something, something, something two. I was like, no, that's not how it works. This is not how we learn this lesson. So after he messed with it, it went to disable for good. Like, now I feel like the FBI. I'm like, I know. How do you get past us?
There's no way to get back in.
No, they say you have to connect to iTunes. So then you connect to iTunes, and they're like, well, this was never connected to iTunes. It's an older iPad, so you have to factory restore. So you lose everything that was on it, which is a lot of, like, weird Photoshopped images of monsters and stuff that he had done. But, you know, he had done it. So he feels bad. We already went over the emotion of having to lose all the material that's on it. And then today, it was like, error, error, error. We cannot restore this back to factory settings because of error. And I'm like, it's the easiest thing in the world. You press and hold for as long as you can, and it erases the whole thing, and then you start from scratch. Like, they won't let you go back to start from scratch. Like, even restoring to factory settings is a hassle with Apple.
Could you bring it to the store, you think?
I'm going to have to. And then they're going to be like, $375. That's $442. And be like, you know, you should just buy a new one. And be like, ah!
Yeah.
I'm going to lose it! All right. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman with you here on WGN. Till 11 o'clock tonight. I hope you were able to withstand the rain. Although it was a weird day with the weather. It kind of fluctuated all over the region. I heard Tom say it was 77 degrees in Kankakee today with hail. Springtime in Chicago. We've got a great show lined up tonight to ride shotgun with you and whatever your Tuesday night plans may be. You know, it's now almost a month since police reforms were suggested by the mayor's task force, but no movement. The mayor said he's waiting to conference with the Department of Justice, but that's not how it usually works when it comes to reforms. What's making the mayor drag his feet when it comes to reforming the Chicago Police Department? Well, we're going to talk about that and the big kerfuffle over school funding in Springfield. The Senate passed a big change reform to the funding formula, giving more money to Chicago public schools. Will it pass the House? And the big question which lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, are asking is, does the city of Chicago deserve more or less for its schools? Mike Fouché from AlderTrack will be here for his weekly chat. My guest tonight at the big table co-founded the Heartland Cafe in Rogers Park 40 years ago. Michael James will be here to talk about revolutions in restaurants, photographs and philosophy, and rising up angry. Mike James, my guest at the big table tonight. Also, Evanston rapper Kwaku Collins. He's burst on the scene. He's signed. He's ready. And he's 19 years old. The former Evanston High School alum will talk about his young career and the music he's making on his computer in his bedroom. And it's Tuesday, so that means it's another installment of Picnic, our weekly segment to give every single member of the 2016 Cubs a legitimate, authentic, and crowdsourced nickname. You call in with your ideas, and if we choose it, you walk away with prizes. Last week was Dexter Fowler, or as we now know him as Free Range.
Used it all weekend.
Did you? Free Range!
You got to use it,
That's
so you got to practice.
Great nickname.
Rob Martier.
Martier comes up with it. That's so good. This week, two players we need nicknames for. Ready? Javier Baez, who's starting at third base tonight, and starting pitcher Kyle Hendricks. Okay, Javier Baez and Kyle Hendricks, 312-981-7200. Matt Klein's going to be with us to give us his expertise, one of the regular members of our ensemble from the Cubs Fan Jam last year. So we will have people in the house and prizes to give away. Picnic coming up at 10 o'clock. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. And this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Well, nice little transition. Why don't we get started? Why don't we get started with the carryout? It's our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The suburban city rivalry is heating up as lawmakers in Springfield are scoffing at the idea of giving more money to Chicago schools. Republican State Senator Matt Murphy called out the mayor and CPS for not doing enough to tighten the old belt and said they should get less money since they have less students. The state funding formula is currently being reformed in Springfield, and some Republicans are calling it like they see it, an attempted bailout. Ooh. When asked for comment, the mayor was like, "What? Palatine? Palatine? This is what I think of your Palatine." And then he shoved his nubby little finger northwesternly. Matt Murphy's from Palatine. Today, the 2016 campaign has turned to VP candidates a little early, but the press is all over it, so why not? Hillary Clinton is the presumptive Democrat nominee for president, and there are rumors that she may pick Senator Bernie Sanders as her running mate. When reached for comment, Bernie Sanders was like, Bernie, I'm calling you. We talked about this. It's Justin from WGN. Also, rumors of Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren joining the ticket. I'll pause so liberals everywhere can compose themselves. We good? You need a cold shower? I'd take a cold shower. On the other side, Donald Trump is still mum, but all signs are pointing to Gary Busey. Yeah. Ted Cruz was back on Capitol Hill today, you know, doing his job as a senator. That blows my mind that this dude's been running for president for a year and a half. And yeah, back to Senate. Same place he ridiculed on the campaign trail. Good news, though, the other senators wouldn't let him play in any of the senators' games, which I think is just called grab ass. That's the one senator game I know. A new State of the World's Plants report says that a quarter of all plants on our planet are in danger of extinction. But you know what? I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, nobody really needs arugula, right? I mean, there are like 17 kinds of tomatoes. I think we'll be fine. Go back to your dorm and try again, science. And in other news, a new study says that obesity may not be as bad for you as once expected. Yep, adding a couple extra pounds may help you stave off death. So there you go. No plants, more fries. Best day ever. A Chicago area man bet his retirement income, about $250,000, on the Cubs to win the World Series. Based on the last 100-plus years, that seems like a safe bet. But let's be clear. Have you looked at your 401k lately? This guy might have the right idea. I mean, somebody is eventually going to take his money, so he might as well have it happen while watching baseball. In weather, it's rainy. In sports, baseball! It's all baseball. The Cubs are at Wrigley Field against the Padres tonight. They've won 7 in a row, which, you know, is just starting to be old hat. I mean, wake me up when they hit 15. The Sox are on the road in Texas taking on the Rangers. How about that extra innings grand slam from Todd Frazier last night? How about that? They intentionally walked Jose Abreu to get to Frazier. He's only hitting .210, but already 10 homers in 2016. To put that into perspective, last year, starting third baseman Connor Gillespie, he hit .300. Tyler Saladino came in, he hit .600. So Todd Frazier is a huge addition to the Sox team and one of the big reasons why they're winning. Steph Curry was the unanimous choice for NBA MVP. It's the first time that's ever happened. Really? With all the MJ years, he was never unanimous? Oh, yeah, that's right, because most of the writers are from New York. I don't know. You got to do John Stocks. John Stocks is so good. He's so good. That's a terrible New York accent. I should just do my John Travolta. John Stocks. He's great. Gina, come back and talk to me. No. The Stars beat the Blues to force a game 7 in the NHL playoffs last night, just in case anyone was still paying attention to these teams. I know I'm not. Man, we should be there. It's boring. I mean, the colors are boring. Green and blue. Blah. And finally, next week is the kickoff to Ferris Fest, the celebration of the 30th anniversary of Ferris Bueller. Organizers are going to celebrate the anniversary all summer long. I could have sworn that the movie was called Ferris Bueller's Day Off, not Ferris Bueller's Gap Year. What do I know? That's the carryout for May 10th, 2016. Hey, do you need some more napkins with your order? Here, I'll give you 200. I don't know how messy you are. Coming up, it's almost been a month since we got the Mayor's Task Force on reform ideas for the Chicago Police Department. We're going to talk with Mike Boucher about why we haven't seen any movement. The mayor wants to conference with the Department of Justice, but that's not necessary. We'll talk about it. Coming up here on The Download, stay with us. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Mike Foucher from AlderTrack. Before that, hey, Rob, how are you, my man?
Good to be back.
Good to have you back.
Yeah.
Baddish was okay last night.
Baddish is good.
Baddish is great. He was serviceable.
Baddish is more than capable.
He was a guy, he was like a, he was like a Javi Baez, you know?
Yeah.
When you're missing your Schwarb.
Jamie Carroll, you can plug him in at second, shortstop. You know, he'd give you, you know, like 280 on the year. It's good.
Tonight,
good.
We're doing Javier Baez and we're doing Kyle Hendricks. So get your Ooh. Thinking hat on for nicknames for those two players.
Yeah, I'm gonna dig deep for that one.
Last week was inspired. Free range.
Good.
For Dexter Fowler,
yeah.
For all who didn't listen last week, Rob Martier came up with Free Range, which is probably the best nickname in the history of nicknames. So
yeah, and for Javi, we can't do something lame like JB or...
No, right.
You know.
There's some good ones already circulating. So.
All right.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Mike James. Michael James from Heartland Cafe. Love that dude. I'm so excited to
you know,
talk.
I was getting really excited about being on until you told everybody that I'm somebody else.
No, that's coming up at
8. Oh, Mike James is coming
on. Mike James, you're Mike Foucher. You're coming up. You don't even know your own name. Look at you.
Oh, my gosh.
No.
I'm so confused.
Michael James is coming up at 8 o'clock. The owner or co-founder of the Heartland. He actually got rid of the Heartland
in
2012.
I really like their granola pancakes.
There you go. Maybe you can tell them in the green room when you're done.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'll do that.
Michael, 40 year, co-founded back in 1976. He is, kind of the unofficial mayor of Rogers Park. We'll talk with Mike coming up in the big table. But first, Mike Foucher from AlderTrack is
here. That's me.
Too many mics.
Too many mics.
A subscription news site that covers all things Chicago politics. You know, we're talking about an article that you guys are releasing just now about police reform. You know, obviously last month we saw a big mayor's task force that did not mince words,
right,
saying what was wrong with the city of Chicago,
right,
and the police department, and here are the reforms and the structural changes were needed. The mayor said he'd take that into account, and he continues to take it into account.
Right.
Mike Foucher is with us.
You know, what's interesting actually is that when the mayor appointed the Police Accountability Task Force back in December, he said that this is going to be, quote, a blueprint for all the changes that are going to be made in Chicago. Since then, he's referred to it really as just building blocks, and that these are just steps along the way. And then he announced, so the task force report came out in the end of April, and about a week later, the mayor had a big press conference where he was going to announce all the changes, and he really only announced that he's going to be implementing about 25 out of the 100 that have been suggested. And a lot of the ones that were suggested were really, really easy ideas. You know, for instance, the idea that there is a policy that as soon as you're arrested, you have an opportunity to make a phone call. And that's not always carried out. Arrestees don't have an opportunity to call a public defender. Well, they can make a phone call, but they can't always necessarily call a public defender that can take care of them. That is, you know, a simple thing.
That's something that I feel like that's the only thing I would know.
Yeah.
If I were ever arrested, like,
well,
you have
one phone call, and a lot of people, they call, you know, like their mom or something like that. They don't necessarily use it in order to call a lawyer.
Right.
And so that they're not immediately assigned a lawyer. And that's something that could be done. It's a low cost change that could be made. But, you know, one of the really interesting statements that we got, we spoke to a man named Jonathan Smith, who used to run the division of the Department of Justice that did investigations. He doesn't anymore, investigations into police departments. And what he said is, I've been watching the mayor's public statements candidly with concern. And, you know, he said that a lot of these things that have been recommended, they're not rocket science, they're not unusual, they're not hard, and yet the mayor and the city council have continued to resist and not make changes.
And that's really the heart of what you're writing about. I mean, you talk to a lot of different people who were not surprised by the fact the mayor hasn't moved, or have sort of scratched their heads and, you know, why the task force even put this together. It is early. We're within a month of the.
Well, it's early of the task force,
but the Department of Justice, gentleman Smith, who you mentioned, mm-hmm. he said that this kind of task force usually you're going to get swift action from,
right?
That things can change right away,
right?
And this is unusual, even if it's only 3 to 4 weeks,
and that it's taking a while before there's anything that's being done. And even now, actually, the mayor's office says that they're being fully transparent, but they're going to be making sure that everything is done correctly, which is usually the kind of words that you use when you say that you're taking your time. But, you know, we take issue with the idea that it's too early to examine this. You know, one of the things that we show in our article, which is available to anybody, it's free. It's not just for subscribers at aldertrack.com. One of the things that we show is that there have been groups, attorneys, activists that have been meeting with Rahm Emanuel since 2012. And actually, the mayor has issued a number of different studies. There was one in 2013. There was one in 2014. There was another one that was done by McCarthy in 2015.
And these aren't readily available. That's what your article points out, that some of them, they're not even online, that they're on a shelf somewhere.
And if they are online, they're sort of buried in some weird page in some place that you got to look for a lot. You got to know exactly the name of what it is in order to find it. So it's not as if it's easy stuff to find. The point that we make is that there have been lots and lots of opportunities for the mayor and city council in order to take action, not just this task force report.
You know, the other part of this, you mentioned the mayor, and that's a big part of it. But city council does play a role in this, in the way that they could force the mayor to move. They could show a little bit more sort of, you know, connected, you know, a united front.
Energy
and reform. And they're sort of following the mayor's path.
Yeah. And the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, Alderman Ariel Raboyras, actually went so far as to say, we're not going to be looking at anything. We're just going to be holding on any action for some time. In December, there were maybe a dozen or 18 different ordinances that were introduced by aldermen in order to codify into law some of these changes of reform, that there would be taser training, that every
body
officer
cameras,
would carry a body camera and have a taser. There were a whole series of changes that were made to abolish the independent police
review
authority.
And we saw down in Springfield, Senator Raul kind of passed something over the last fall. And so there has been movement in other bodies of government, but the city council sitting on their hands right now.
They literally said, we're not going to do anything.
And this was all – and there were, like you said, a lot of ordinance, even Alderman Ed Burke, but they all seem to be following – some sort of backdoor deal that says, you know what, let's all do this together.
Right.
Let's all wait for the
right.
mayor's cue.
Right.
Let's not rock the boat.
Well, Alderman Reboyras really actually went so far as to say that in consultation with the mayor, he's made this decision. So they're really... You know, you see right there, there really isn't any independence.
Now, is there a chance that, you know, that the alderman and the mayor are meeting closed door and they're going to come up with a huge comprehensive change before union negotiations start on a new police contract? And that's what this is about, like putting it all together?
Sure.
Or
yeah. Yeah. Actually, a really incredible, magical thing is going to happen when you least expect it. No, I mean, you know, that anything could happen. And frankly, you know, I give Alderman Emanuel a lot of credit, or Mayor Emanuel, a lot of credit. He could make any kind of change. He could do anything he wanted at any time. He could be having secret meetings. Mm-hmm. But, you know, really what we've seen up to this point is that there hasn't been any political will. And he could change. He could do something really great. But we've seen study after study after study, problem after problem ignored for at least the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, we'll have to pay attention to what happens next. Mike Fouché, you can find that article at aldertrack.com.
That's right.
Let's take a quick break. We come back. We got to talk school funding. The Senate passed a big measure today that essentially funds, gives more money to Chicago Public Schools. But whether or not that's going to make it through the House and then to the governor, then back to the House. There's a lot that still has to happen. We'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN.
What is that? That's like music for like a 70s.
Well, I mean,
sitcom.
We're talking about politics. We're talking about this is the kind of
Like open.
This is like
somebody's apartment.
This would be the Aldertrack's TV theme song
with like brown plaid. Yeah.
This
everything.
Would be your Hill Street Blues right there. That was a Hill Street Blues kind of beginning for you. Mike Fouché is here from aldertrack.com. School funding. Today,
call me Officer Ranko.
What a great day for sort of suburban city rhetoric. Like the suburban lawmakers,
let's
Matt
all just
Murphy,
hate one another,
yeah,
right?
We've seen it from Republicans that they are questioning whether or not changing the school formula, funding formula in Springfield, amounts to a bailout for the Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah. And, you know, so yesterday, Governor Rauner went to Lyons, to a high school in Lyons, and that is the hometown of both Christine Redonio, Senator Redonio, the Republican leader, as well as Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader. And, you know, he had a big thing about how we're going to support the suburbs. And Durkin said, I am not going to support anything that takes money away from our schools. And that's essentially what the bill that just passed the Senate, supported by the Democrats, would do, is that it would reduce money for the wealthier districts, suburbs, and would add money to Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, there's really no other way to do this unless you're going to increase the spending.
But I will be the advocate for the suburban districts. So they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't do anything in this budget struggle. They should not be in any situation where they lose money from the state. The CPS, Chicago Public Schools, needs to get their act together, get their budgets tight, figure out their pension payments. They've been kicking down the road.
Right.
And they shouldn't. And I kind of see where a Senator Murphy or a leader Durkin are coming from, where they say, you know what, we don't want you to just kind of quote unquote get away with your financial missteps on the backs of our suburban districts.
Okay, that's cool. You know, but I think that one of the things that the problems with that argument is that the suburbs have been benefiting for a long time from a formula that is favorable to them anyway, and they have a relatively low number of poor students. And then the other thing is that actually the way that funding is set up is that the suburbs, suburban school districts don't have to pay into the pension fund in the same way the city of Chicago
does.
That's
a really big point to make, that the way that the pension sort of pickups are done for suburban districts, the state has been picking those up.
And, you know, this has been a thing. This really right here has been where the horns have been locking. The city of Chicago is saying we're paying extra into the fund, And suburban schools have been saying, well, you guys are screwed up. We don't want to have to pay for you. It's two arguments that are talking past each other. And at some point, I think that the two sides are going to have to negotiate something. I'm not sure I understand why suburban districts, why people in the suburbs think that they will do okay if the city of Chicago goes down the toilet. I'm not sure why they
think
that.
Well, it is I mean, they're interconnected. There's no doubt about it because the school systems and this area should be considered a region, not suburban city.
And there's another issue, too, though, which is that suburbs have, and it's not talked about as much because the numbers are spread out over a lot of different places, but suburbs have just as big a pension problem as the city of Chicago. And it's the pensions of the fire protection districts and the libraries and the mosquito abatement districts and the park districts, you know, all spread out. And when you take that overlapping tax burden, it's just as bad for the suburbs as it is in Chicago. I think they're point where it's all going to break is maybe, you know, 5 years from now. So we're just going to revisit this all over again for the suburbs in 5 years or maybe less. So I'm not sure why it is that suburban leaders have been saying, well, you, Chicago, you got a problem. Forget about it.
Well, I mean, how political is this? Because obviously the Democrats, especially the Chicago Democrats, are leading both the Senate and the House.
Right.
And most of the people who are involved in changing those formulas are Chicago Democrats. And the people who are speaking out, Leader Redonio, Leader Durkin, Senator Murphy, those are Republicans from the suburbs. How much of this is just basic politics?
Well, Illinois has really been playing kick the can politics down the road, politics for some time. You know, we don't want to have to deal with it. It's somebody else's fault. And we've been doing that for a long time, both Democrats and Republicans. And at some point, it's going to have to be addressed and fixed. Every other state, you know, they've been dealing with it. Illinois, we seem to have a problem with that. We keep trying to find somebody else to blame. I'm not sure why. But it is definitely politics. It passed the Senate because of a large Democratic majority. Now it's going to go to the House, and it's probably going to pass the House with a large Democratic majority, but then it needs the signature.
So the governor, even though it probably won't be very it won't look great to the governor, will probably veto it because it's a Democrat sort of change in the formula.
He's also said that he doesn't want to take away money from the districts either. He agrees with Durkin and Redonio.
Exactly. So. And then it goes back to the House, which in theory has enough for a supermajority. The problem is it's not that super.
I mean, there's a number of people, not just our guy Ken Duncan, who sat in the very seat I'm sitting in right now. I feel his vibe. Not just Ken Duncan, who would probably vote against it because he's been aligned with the Governor Rauner, but also Representative Jack Franks, who is a staunch Democrat from McHenry County, who says there's never a tax that I'm going to vote for. And if this results in a tax increase, you can count on Jack Franks saying, no way, Jose.
A lot happening, and it's starting to here it is, because at the end of May is the end of the spring session. We probably are going to see some spillover since we still don't have a budget. But, I mean, this is traditionally where we're going to have a lot of action happening out of Springfield.
May 30th is when they got to get it all done. And if they don't get it done before May 30th, then everything. Well, after that point, any budget that is going to be passed has to be passed with a supermajority. And we just talked about
the
Democrats only have a one-vote supermajority, and we're talking about two people that could flake.
Yeah.
So Democrats really need to get something done by May 30th. You know, of course, you could just kick the can down the road a little bit longer, and probably the next opportunity would be sometime in veto session, which I think is in November. And so that's after the election. And, you know, really what we're looking at here is that CPS is going to run out of money very soon.
Much, much more to talk about. We're out of time. Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com, subscription site covering all things Illinois and Chicago politics.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in. See
Great
you
to be
week.
Here.
Snowing in off the lake, punching holes in the dark, through the lonely streets of Rogers Park.
Justin Towns Earl, song about Rogers Park here on WGN Radio. My guest tonight at the big table is the unofficial mayor of Rogers Park. I'm sure he loves that. Michael James co-founded the Heartland Cafe at Glenwood and Lund 40 years ago this year. He created much more than just a restaurant. He created an urban oasis. It's really for liberal-minded folks in the neighborhood to get together, listen to music, read from the Heartland Journal. All sorts of stuff happens at the Heartland Cafe. Michael's a photographer as well. His exhibit, Pictures from the Long Haul, just wrapped up at the Adventureland Gallery. He's a prolific writer and radio personality, hosts live from the Heartland every Saturday morning at WLUW. Michael doesn't own the Heartland anymore, but what he built along the L tracks in Rogers Park is something of an anomaly. A community restaurant that has thrived for four decades in Chicago. Michael James, good to see you. Welcome to the big table.
Good to see you again.
I know, right?
It's been a long time
since
you and Schadenfreude were up there in the Heartland Studio Theater.
Yeah, full disclosure. We were, I guess, since we were renting from you, business partners, right?
We were business partners.
Like for a couple years there.
Yeah, it was good. And you were on the radio show and...
Yeah,
you guys
fun.
Performed. It's good.
But, I think about the Heartland Cafe, and I know for a fact that hundreds of thousands of Chicagoans have experiences with the Heartland Cafe. I've had experience, everyone. What does it feel like for you to be at 40 years? I mean, that's crazy to think that the Heartland, 1976.
Well, I'm very glad that it's still there. If you followed the Heartland, we had wonderful times. We had lots of people there from Obama, the Jefferson Starship, Governor Quinn, just tons of people. But we also had a rocky road financially at times. I was less interested in my business partner, Katie Hogan, I think in making money than in actually doing good in the world and, being a place that people could get inspired.
Right.
And, It was on May 1st in 1976 that, I had been in a group called Rising Up Angry, and that sort of came to an end.
What was that group?
That was a group of, we did organize white working class youth and their parents. We had a free health clinic. We had a legal program. We did a lot of stuff. We owned a building on Belmont, and... We were pretty radical.
Well, this was a group, Rising Up Angry, that was more about trying to get the working class youth involved in a movement, which kind of skipped over them.
Well, in a lot of ways, a lot of people wrote off white working class people and whites in general as being progressive sometimes. And you can see it today. Everyone talking about blue collar workers maybe going for Trump, and it would be a perfect time to have us out in the neighborhoods. And, I spent a lot of time running around the city, all over the city, selling our paper, talking to people, cooling out fights, recruiting. We put on big events at the Midland Hotel. We got chased by the Red Squad. We got arrested. A lot of things happened. And so when that came to an end, it was I tried to keep the organization going in the sense that we were going to call it the Rising of Us All. But it didn't work out that way. That may still come. I then started thinking about, I was teaching at Columbia College, and I was talking about building a little mini progressive economy with these, you would have a bicycle repair shop, automobile repair shop, a recording studio, a restaurant, a bar, a theater. And someone in the class actually offered us money to do it. And she didn't ever do it. She opened her own place for a short period of time. But we went up there on... to visit the Heartland, and it was a rainy day. It was in February, I think, of 76, and the sun came out, and there was a rainbow, and there was this big open patio in the front or sidewalk, and I said, oh, this is going to be cool, and we did it, and we started working on the place, and on August 11th, 76, we opened our doors to 43 people. And we, I was doing a lot of running then. I had played football in college, but I had taken off sports for a while. I was kind of hostile to coaches. And then the next thing I know, I was getting back into it. I was reading Adele Davis. I was eating healthy food. I was doing carrot juice, going to Sherwin's health food store, doing fast.
What was Rogers Park like in 1976? Give us a picture of what it was like.
It had a number of Loyola students. It had Catholics. It had Jews. A lot of the Jews community was moving a little bit west. It had an African-American community up on the north end. as well as mixed in a little bit, and it had a growing Mexican community along Clark Street. So it was then, and it still is, probably the most diverse ward or neighborhood in the city. I like to claim in the world or the country. My kid in Queens says, no, they got more different kind of people. But there's 80-some-odd different ethnic and racial groups up there in Rogers Park. And it had its rough edges. It still does, but it's... you know, there were a lot of people who moved into Rogers Park, I think, because they liked diversity, but they didn't necessarily like class diversity. So you still have some ongoing issues of the threat of gentrification. And certainly, you know, as much as I can be critical of my alderman, Joe Moore, and, you know, he's a friend and I've liked him a lot. I do think that he's walked a fine line between the developers and trying to deal with the community folks that live there.
Well,
so it's not easy.
That's hard. I mean, because there's been a lot of people who have seen Rogers Park and the cheap real estate and the ability to come in as close to the lake as a place that could be the next Lincoln Park, that could be a connection.
Yeah, but that's been going on for 40 years.
That's what I'm saying.
For us, it was like, okay, we're up in the hills. We're going to do this thing, and then we're going to take it down in the valley and make some changes. But, you know, being a petty bourgeois businessman with socialist leanings, it was, you know, we got caught in a lot of crossfires.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of times when you couldn't really I had a wonderful time. But there were times when just the daily grind of being overdrawn, that kind of stuff.
Well, so you say it great. I was reading one piece about the beginnings of the Heartland that, you know, you had railed in and sort of been against the government
we were pretty critical.
But you were critical and you were working against the man, you know, quote unquote. And then by opening up a business and opening up a restaurant, you had to figure out how to work with the man because there are a lot of permits, there are a lot of costs, there are things involved. And that was a little
I don't miss that part.
I was going to say, that was difficult. That was a difficult transition for you guys.
It was. And, you know, I think my business partner, Katie Hogan, has been really great during all that period. You know, her dad was the deputy commissioner of buildings, the chief electrical inspector, and he played it really straight with us. But we certainly found a lot of people who tried to get payoffs and do a lot of those kind of things. And it was a grind. But on the other hand, you had people coming from far away, like a pilot from Italy. I saw him show up one day. He'd read about the Heartland. Katie would see people in Nepal and, you know, with a Heartland t-shirt. And I think that we had a number of people working there. We had a lot of Latinos working there, and they weren't necessarily legal because we said, hey, you know, Mexico most of these states in the Southwest belong to Mexico. Who's illegal? Who's doing what? And anyhow, it was a lot of good things happened there, and the food was great. And we ended up selling it to a guy in the community who we had known named Tom Rosenfeld. And he has a cider company called Earth First Farms. And he had a farm out in Michigan, and he was looking for kind of a farm-to-table operation, I think, where he would grow things and serve them. And so the Heartland has changed. In the room, the big dining room where we had Obama, where we had the Harold Washington rally, where the last thing we did was a Chewy rally, is now the old True Nature health food store, which kind of got driven out in Edgewater because of the new Whole Foods. So that got moved into the Heartland. The dining room went into the old store. The Buffalo Bar is still there. The Red Line Tap, which we acquired, that's still there, doing a lot of music. The No Exit Cafe, which we got eventually, is still doing place.
What about the Heartland Studios?
And the Heartland Studio is still there. It's Boho Theater is still in there.
Good.
So all that stuff is going on in one little spot.
I love it. It's such an interesting slice of life for Chicago. If you have not been up to Rogers Park to see it, it's worth a look.
It's a little crisper and cleaner than it was.
I don't like to hear that. Michael James is my guest tonight. He was a co-founder 40 years ago. We'll continue our conversation. I want to talk about your photography and things non-Heartland.
Sure.
Coming up here and on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're listening to Twin Peaks, the song Holding Roses from their forthcoming album Down in Heaven. Why are we listening to Twin Peaks when Michael James is our guest at the big table? Because his son is in the band. They're very popular in
the rock band. Yeah, they're really hot.
They are. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, we were talking earlier about the Heartland, and we sold it to Tom Rosenfeld, the majority of it, in 2012. And that was just when my son Katie and Lake Jack Henry James and some of his buddies were rehearsing in the basement and put together their first little tape. And he graduated from Jones. Some of them were at Lane. And they went on a tour at age 18. They did 22 shows in 20 days, went as far as Seattle, Southwest, and all that. And I used to love them rehearsing in the basement. Now they're probably in flight coming back from Australia. They're going to be at Lincoln Hall this Friday night. That's Friday the 13th. It is sold out. It will be streamed by, I forget the name of the outfit. And their new album, Down in Heaven, is coming out on Friday.
But, I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, to be in the basement of the Heartland Cafe.
It was the house.
It was the house.
But he used the No Exit and the Heartland Studio and the Red Line as places to put on little shows.
Yeah, right.
And when he was a kid.
All of that, I mean, it sort of goes back to what you're talking about, a community. I mean, this is what you built in Rogers Park was sort of and continues to be an urban oasis. A lot of artists, No Exit Cafe is famous for its poetry. The Heartland Studio has a lot of really sort of experimental off-loop theater.
Yeah.
The Red Line Tap has live music, and the Heartland as well. I mean, the Heartland is folk music and places that
I don't think they're doing as much music, but they have a whole Full Tilt health food store in there, and they do some events in there. And I tell you, the Red Line, it really looks great. You know, this was a kind of a rough edge bar way in the old days. And then we did a lot of music. Kind of my view of it was kind of a roadhouse, you know, kind of a place. They've taken out the wall. It's much bigger. They've got a green room. My old office, which was next door, is a green room now. And it's really kind of cool.
I don't like it. I'll take the dingy bar. I'll take the Red Line.
No, it's not that fixed up. I don't want to give you the wrong impression.
All right. So let's talk about, you know, obviously, one of the things I loved about the Heartland is when you would walk in, there would be pictures on the wall. One of the pictures was a shirtless young Michael James, you know, sort of pushing a, almost like overturning a car or a truck from a 68 convention or you know, it showed.
You're talking about the Democratic Convention 68.
It was a paddy wagon.
I had black leather jacket on, and I tried to shield my face from the camera. But I had no success.
But the fun of it was that there were there was a lot of photography involved, and you just had a exhibit, pictures from the Long Hall. Talk about your photography. I mean, do you always consider yourself a photographer?
Well, I always took pictures. I don't know if I ever always considered myself. I did for a while when I went to Lake Forest College, and I did a lot of sculpture up there. I had been into hot rod cars as a kid growing up, so I welded a lot. I did a lot of sculpture with welding. I did full-size boxers out of, like, plaster. But I always took pictures. In high school, I met a guy who put out a magazine called Rodding and Restyling, and I used to take pictures at New England drag strips and car shows, and I'd sell them to him. And then I ended up writing stories for him. And so all of those negatives were in my car when I drove to California in the summer of 1960 from Connecticut to work in a cannery. And I was letting a migrant worker off who was going up to Fresno. I was near San Jose. And I woke up, and there were two cars across the highway 101, in flames. And I remember saying, there's a guy in that car. And I started to go for it, and the truck driver grabbed me. And it turned out the guy had been out of the car. He was this migrant worker. And we had pushed my car, which had stalled, and I had just jumped back in it to pop the clutch. And that's, you know, I don't remember anything after that. Jeez. So all of the negatives I had from the hot rod years are gone. But I think the first picture I have in a book I'm doing called Pictures from the Long Haul is a picture of a guy standing on a pier in Lake Forest on Easter morning, 1961. Then there's some pictures of over near Cabrini Green and Oak Street of a church with some little kids. And then there's pictures, a few from the free speech movement at Berkeley.
Well, it's really fun to look at the photos that I saw from the exhibit. I mean, a lot of stuff from the 70s before the Heartland opened up.
Yeah.
A lot of what Chicago was like. And also counterculture Chicago. It wasn't just, you know, hey, there's the big buildings. I mean, there was a lot that you bring out that really shows us what it was like to live here in the 70s.
Yeah, and, you know, there's those pictures, and there's pictures of, you know, in 62, I drove a Triumph motorcycle at age 20 to Mexico to go to school. And I actually had I got two pictures of President Kennedy, who was there. They were the Organization of American States. They were trying to keep Cuba out. And I remember he was going up the Reforma in a Mercedes, and right behind them, or right in front of them, was a Cadillac. And I got a picture of these guys in the Cadillac, the Secret Service guys, looking back after a motorcycle had hit a guy who came out from the crowd. Nice. I cocked the camera. This was like 30, 40 yards, and clicked it again as Kennedy went by. So I have this photograph called Fading Away, JFK in Mexico, 1962. And it's a year before he was killed.
Wow.
There's lots of pictures. You know, there's the Mexico pictures. There's pictures from the Soviet Union, from South Africa, from Cuba, from Nicaragua. We went down there and played baseball, both Cuba and Nicaragua, with athletes United for Peace. And all of a sudden, when we sold the Heartland, or the majority of the Heartland, I said, I'm going to put together a photo book.
Yeah.
And I got hung up writing stories that are in the Rag blog with a lot of photographs. I'm still working on that, but I'm back to just putting together 83 photographs that will probably be done by the summer.
Pictures from the long haul, they're exquisite. I mean, it's really great to see, especially in this digital age when everything is so, everyone can pop their phones here, there, and wherever, to see what you were able to do with an actual
It's been a
camera.
Nice way to spend a cold winter scanning. I mean, I've scanned like close to 5,000 photos, and there is a website, michaelgaylordjames.com.
There you go.
And I got that name, Gaylord. My dad, I really hated the name, but then I saw Paul Robeson in a movie called Showboat. And the guy in the movie, the star of the movie, was called Gaylord Ravenel. He was a gambler. My dad used to say he was a gambler on the Mississippi. So when I saw that movie, I came to terms with my middle name, Gaylord.
MichaelGaylordJames.com. Mike James is my guest tonight at the big table, the longtime co-owner of the Heartland, celebrating 40 years of the Heartland Cafe this year. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get to the news. We'll come back. I want to get your take on Chicago. You know,
sure.
We've seen a lot of change in the last couple of years, and you've been here for a long time. So we'll talk to Mike James about that when we return here on The Download. Stay with us. Twin Peaks there, Walk to the One You Love from Down in Heaven, which is out on the 13th. They're going to be at Lincoln Hall, sold-out show.
But streamed.
That's not our guest tonight. That's a father. Michael James is my guest here at the big table. He's the co-founder of the Heartland Cafe, photographer, writer, activist, radio host, live from the Heartland, is on WLUW every Saturday morning. One of the things that's always brought up with the Heartland Cafe is activism in politics. I mean, there's always you've sort of been the bastion for the far left, really. I mean, I would even say that.
Hallelujah.
I was going to say maybe I don't know who you're leaning for this election, but I would say that maybe Bernie Sanders is a little too uptight for you guys.
Well, I've been rooting for Bernie, but I'm certainly will support Hillary when it comes to that.
So let me one last time I saw you. I remember we were talking about you guys, the Heartland Cafe, came out in some paperwork that you guys were bugged during NATO, that the Chicago police were bugging the Heartland to make sure.
Well, they sent plants in, to try to talk to people and thought something would be going on. You know, I don't know who comes into the Heartland. I wasn't there then. We'd already sold the majority of our interest in it. But it was a great story that, the cops got caught spying on people, and it was like the days of the Red Squad back in the 60s and the 70s when these guys were chasing the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, rising up angry, young patriots, they were just everywhere. And pretty nefarious dudes.
So for us reading the newspaper, I mean, we're like, wow, that's so surprising. For you, it's not that surprising. You've been in Chicago. You've been political. You know what the Chicago – you have a relationship with the Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I'm a real patriotic kind of dude. And I grew up in New England. I wanted to be in the Marines. I actually joined the Marines but found out about peace movement before I actually – that actually came to be. This was back in 63, I think. But, you know – Chicago is a place where, I mean, when I started to say I was kind of patriotic, love my country, and I grew up being pretty supportive of like Adlai Stevenson and Kennedy and those kind of people. When I went to Mexico in 62, I started seeing things on the wall that said, Kennedy, get out. And I started asking questions. And I began to, you know, sooner or later, I learned about U.S. imperialism. And, I really think that America is a wonderful place, but I think there are two sides. There's the iron fist kind of side, and there's the velvet glove kind of side. And the U.S., it's done a lot of good in the world, but it's also a lot of profit. A lot of people have gotten ahead off the backs of other people, not only internally, but internationally. Mm-hmm. And back home here in Chicago, I always consider Chicago the center of the universe, the place with the largest concentration of more diverse racial, ethnic, religious groups, and that what we build here will make a difference. And I think that going back to 68 and the Democratic Convention and then the kind of coalition of radical groups that came together and then the election of Harold Washington really put us on the map and on the direct line for really being the key place in the country about where stuff was happening.
Well, you have always been sort of the epicenter of that movement. The Heartland Cafe is almost known in Chicago as a place that you go for. It's known as sort of like a liberal epicenter.
Yeah, and still is.
And you've had, you know, your share of run-ins with the Chicago police, but not just that. I mean, You've defied or you've been against the sort of the way that Chicago has moved in the last couple decades. I know of Mayor Daley, like the Daleys and Michael James are not necessarily breaking bread together.
The younger Daley did come and eat at the Heartland one
he
time.
He did?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was he was with a guest of the alderman and it was with a group of people and we shook hands. We were all very nice. You know, and I remember starting to like that Daley when he defied... remember he moved an airport to Gary for a while? There was something like that.
Right.
I thought that was cool. But I think that there is a movement building in this town that really needs to be watched and paid attention to. And I don't mean just Black Lives Matter. That's been key.
You're talking about a progressive movement.
Yeah, a progressive movement. I think the Chewy campaign was really crucial. I mean, you think about it. You know, if that Laquan McDonald case had been exposed a little bit earlier, it'd be a different game. I mean, Chewy got 46% of the vote. We were the only lakefront ward to go for Jesus Chewy Garcia. And we also just won for Bernie up there. So I worked for a long time with the Democratic Party up there. First David Orr, who I'm still real close to and work with in the community. Joe Moore for a long time was out there kind of alone as a progressive guy.
Yeah.
And he kind of flipped. And he would make a case that he's still a progressive. I don't think rooting for charter schools is really the way you do that. We ended up starting a new organization called Network 49. And we had a meeting last night. It was packed to the gills at Willie White Park. And the principal, Troy LaRivière, how did you say it? From Blaine.
Yep.
This guy is so on target. He has an analysis of charter schools. He has analysis of CPS. I was really impressed. And there is clearly a movement on the north side, and I think it'll spread further to no more charter schools. Even Heather Staines, who's our state senator, who's been good on it sometimes, but also has been involved with charters, I think has made a pledge recently to no new charters.
Along with Jan Schakowsky and
with Kelly Cassidy.
You have obviously the Heartland Cafe has been influential, but for a long time you were outsiders. I mean, you were kind of the alternative. You've always been the Democrats, the alternative. I mean, the Heartland is not your, hey, put a Mayor Daley sign or Rahm Emanuel sign up and we're the Democrats, go Hillary.
No,
it's a different kind of place. But you're seeing more and more you guys move to the main, not necessarily your politics, but more people accepting that. Is that strange for you to sort of see a progressive movement balloon here in Chicago, that the place is packed for your meetings?
No, I think
like
it's it's what's supposed to happen. I think that, you know, the more people become aware of what goes on, who controls things, where the money comes from, what the policies are, whose interest it serves. You know, people are not dumb. People are smart. You've got to give them an opportunity. You've got to, you know, back to the days of Rising Up Angry was reaching out. You kind of hit someone on one shoulder or on one issue, spin them around with other issues, and they go, oh, I see. You know, it's a system. It's a, you know, it's a political structure. And, you know, here in Chicago, there's people that are starting to really, there's, you know, now you have 11 members in the Progressive Caucus. Mm-hmm. And that other so-called Progressive Caucus, the, what was it called? The, you know, the senator from Illinois, anyhow, Paul Douglas, they kind of, I don't think they're doing much. I think the Progressive Caucus is really kind of on the move.
Well, let me, you know, the best way to, I mean, for you, I mean, a lot of people would have sort of, given, I don't want to say given up, maybe change their politics.
A lot
as they
of people
get older.
Do.
Right? They just, well, they just get older, yeah. And they say, okay, well, maybe there's something more important, or maybe I'm not going to be the leader. I mean, I'm retired. I'm 74 years old. I'm going to do something else. But you seem to be ramping up. Like this is the start of the second stage of your life.
Well, I got to say that being, I guess, you know, some people would say I'm retired has really allowed me. You know, I used to always think of all these things I was going to do, books I was going to put out, more movies I would be in. All those kind of things, or even make. But, you know, just the day-to-day grind of running a business and turning out great food and dealing with people and, you know, the city, et cetera, it's kind of, I wouldn't have ever happened. So I'm really thankful to Tom Rosenfeld that he came along and bought the Heartland. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time, as I, you know, we talked earlier on doing photography, but also paying attention to politics, talking to people, and I get to go to the gym. I mean, I understand. I always went to the gym, lifted weights, played ball, but you know, now it's like that's the best part of the day because you know you know it's like how do you stay in life for the long haul,
right?
You know, and so I've always ate real healthy. I worked out. I had, my vices were minimal. Some people may not agree with that, but I think so, and. I'm looking forward to the days that come. I mean, I'm looking forward to the next mayoral election. I'm looking forward to what goes on in the city. We've got a situation in the state house that is terrible. And, you know, more and more people got to step up. And it's fun. I think you make it fun.
For you, Mike, I mean, this has been a life. I mean, you've lived, like I said at the beginning, you're kind of the unofficial mayor of Rogers Park.
Well, some people would grumble at that.
But, I mean, you've done, I mean, you're sort of a poster child for doing things, doing whatever you want to do. I mean, you talked about that. I mean, you were in Andy Davis, even The Fugitive, just
yeah.
Because.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of his. I'm in about 8 or 9 movies with Andy Davis.
You know,
I get a pension from SAG now.
There you go. You're a photographer. You know, you're a writer. You're bringing, you know, all sorts of the Heartland Journal you're going to bring back at some point. You're a radio host. I mean, you're sort of a renaissance guy. Your kids are following in step. I mean, we just talked about your one son in Twin Peaks.
And the other one used to be in the – Hal was in the Smith Westerns, and he just did his first screenplay. And, yeah, my other kids are doing good. I mean, I got Koya. She's now the head of the incoming head of the theater department at DePaul. My son Jesse James in New York, he's got a lot going on. And my son David Livman, who did I leave out here? Casey Blue is working for Penguin. I got grandkids coming this summer now. You know, it's kind of cool. Molly's kids. I didn't mention Molly.
When you reflect on your life.
And I mean, my wife, Paige.
When you reflect on your life, I mean, you're only 74 years old, but I mean, you look back, I mean, that is a lot to kind of shove in. You shoved a lot in as, you know, as your time at the Heartland, even before that, you know, with Rising Up Angry. When you look back on it, I mean, did you accomplish the things that you wanted to accomplish, you know, with being the member or the owner of the Heartland with rising up against a man, that kind of thing?
Well, I don't know if we got as far as we thought we were going to get. But I think we certainly have contributed to Rogers Park being a kind of a progressive community. Still, you know, there's you know, it's got a gentrification tendency, but it has a lot of poorer people living up there. And I think that the general vibe in that community is good. You know, we were part of the Harold Washington election, the two elections. We had Obama at the Heartland. You know, I interviewed Obama on the radio show, and I remember saying, this guy could be the president. And, you know, and then his first commercials were had my photographs of El Paso Juarez on the wall behind him they used in their first commercials. And, you know, and I think that the Chewy campaign, which Katie was the North Side director of that, my business partner, Katie, and we worked real hard on that. I think we you know, it's incremental. You know, you take a few steps forward, you take some steps backward. You're going to suffer some losses. It goes in waves. But I think that incrementally things are a little bit more progressive than they used to be. And I think that as divided as the country is, I think that certainly the progressive side of the Democratic Party is, you know, is rising up, so to speak.
Last question. Politics aside, why'd you stay here in Chicago? What was it about this town that kept you here and contributing to?
Well, I first came to Chicago in 42 to visit my grandparents in South Shore. My dad went to Hyde Park High in the University of Chicago. He went off and produced like Man of La Mancha and Broadway plays. But he always talked real highly of Chicago. And I didn't know where I was going to go to college. And I got into a million schools through this college placement service, and one was Lake Forest. And he wouldn't let me go to UConn where my girlfriend was going to go. So he said, oh, Lake Forest, that's a good place. I used to go to dances up there or something. So I stopped here in my 44 hot rod coupe on my way to work in a cannery. And it was closer to my girlfriend in Connecticut. And that romance didn't last. We're still friends. But, you know, it just, when I went to Berkeley to graduate school and the free speech movement, all that, I just wanted to go back to Chicago. I thought it was the center of the universe. I thought what we built in Chicago, you know, and I love the music. I love the food. I love the diversity. I like the different people. And, you know, California's nice. Connecticut's nice. Florida's nice. Texas, all those places. But except for the bitter cold, where else would you want to be besides Chicago? You know, what did Nelson Algren say? Somewhere between such and such street and North Troy Street, Chicago divided my heart, making me love the place forever, but knowing she never loved me.
Hey, Michael James, the co-owner, former co-owner of the Heartland Cafe, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this season.
August 11th.
Also a photographer, writer, radio show host, and a proud father of some musicians here and writers here in town. Michael, thanks so much for being my guest.
Thanks, Justin. It's really nice to see you again.
All right. So fun to have Mike James in here. Love that dude. Pete, you live up in Rogers Park.
Yeah.
What's the Heartland mean to you? Nothing.
Spend a lot of time in there during college.
Yeah, right.
A lot of veggie chili. Eat a lot of veggie chili from there over the years.
I think of all the great stuff. I mean, it was amazing to me to think as a Chicagoan to have sort of a key, essentially, when Schadenfreude did shows at the Heartland. We did it for a long time. We did 3 years or so. And so we kind of had a key to the sort of urban oasis. We can go downstairs in the basement. We can go to the back, to the kitchen. And it's kind of great to be a part of that establishment. And, you know, I didn't know Mike from anybody.
Yeah.
And we just sort of became part of that community, and then we kind of outgrew it, which was sad because it was always our show was in that Heartland studio, and the first week we rented it, we opened the door and we woke up the theater artist who was renting it.
Yeah.
Like, was just staying there in the theater. And we're like, you can't stay here. And like, no, Mike said it's okay. And I'm like, all right, let's move along. And then it took like 2 months before Mike's like, can you guys just rent this theater out for me? I really don't want to do that. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be fine. One of my first experiences of underage drinking was at the Heartland back in 1993, when I was like, Chicago's so cool. So a friend's like, just come to the Heartland. I'm like, I'm only 19. And they're like, I ain't gonna check. Like, it's one of those things.
Yeah, so they might not let you do a shot, but they'll
yeah, exactly.
It's still nice up there, you know. I mean, that area in Glenwood, you know, it's beautiful. It's just just went to go see their production of Rent at No Exit.
Oh yeah.
It was just wonderful. I don't know, I think it's closing soon, but it was amazing.
Is No Exit still like tiny?
Yeah.
It's been years since I've been in there, but I remember I used to go see great shows there. And a lot of the old neo-futurists would do shows, like some variety shows. Dave All did his show there.
I mean, this production is amazing. And Rent, if you're familiar, you know, you think it takes a big place to do it. But I mean, they just do a wonderful job. And it was one of those things where, you know, we got dinner beforehand and you're you're being served by the people in the show, which is always weird. You know, you feel uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Like in the middle during the intermission, he comes out, you know, guy who's we just watched for an hour and a half just work his ass off on stage. He's giving me a cookie in intermission.
It's like, God, I don't have enough rent. How am I going to get some rent?
Great.
I don't have any rent, and I'm sick.
That's essentially the play, right?
That's rent. A lot of dancing and choreography, but that is the plot. How am I going to pay for my rent, and I'm sick? That's essentially it. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest just released his first feature album. It's called Nat Love, and it's the first from Evanston hip-hop artist Kwaku Collins. Collins writes and produces his own work, and this feature follows up on a few EPs he's had released over the last couple of years. Here's a track off Nat Love featuring Taylor Bennett. It's called Vanilla Skies.
In the eye of a storm, you're the only belief that I have found safety. Within the night, I were formed to the norm that you and I created. And so I typed a text to someone that I loved. I'm hungover, Sam. Something told me not. Settle when it's time. Catch your falling high. When we trip, don't fall. We just drift through air. You can't see my thoughts, but I can take you to vanilla skies.
That's Vanilla Skies featuring Taylor Bennett. Nat Love is on the Chicago indie hip-hop label Closed Sessions. Make no mistake, this is not a rap album. Yes, Kwaku spits lyrics up and down the tracks, but the music is soulful, diverse. It's got lots of guitar and percussion. It's a very mature piece of work. And why do I say that? Because Kwaku Collins is just 19 years old, and he's my guest tonight. Kwaku, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
When I say it's not a rap album, do you agree?
Yeah, I can agree. It's not just a rap album. You know, it's got influence from so many other genres that it can kind of fall into other categories. But, you know, hip hop by default, because that's where it all finds the common ground.
I was kind of taken aback of how soulful it was. It's very romantic. It's really a collection of love songs.
Yeah.
It's not your traditional, you know, rap music where you're going to go one style, then another style. I mean, it has a flow to it, but it's definitely in a more romantic verse. Was that the idea?
Yeah, that is the idea. That was inevitably what this album was going to become for me, regardless of what else I was going through in my life. It's just really the timing.
Was there something going on in your life that you're like, all right, I'm gonna do a bunch of love songs?
I see the songs off of Nat Love, maybe not as all love songs in the romantic sense, but I think in all relationships and all interactions between anything on the earth or in the universe, there's love in there somehow, in some way, shape, or form. Not even emotional or physical. It can be chemical. You know, it's all there.
All right, let's talk about your influences, because you come from a music family. Talk about growing up around music.
My father is a musician. My mother is a teacher and a writer. You know, in the house, from a very young age, from before I could walk, there were drums and guitars and shakers and just all these tools to really broaden my view of the world musically. So from before I could walk, you know, I was playing African rhythms, Pali rhythms, playing Panlogo drums and djembes and junjuns and things like that. Also the music that my father was showing me and my mother was showing me, it was, you know, Mickey Hart's percussion album,
right,
traditional Ghanaian music, and then Pat Benatar. That's what I was coming from as a kid. And then my sister showed me Kanye West and things like that. So it's a really rich background that I come from.
When did you recognize that, you know, you wanted to pursue a career in this? I mean, because it's one thing to be influenced by, you know, your dad or just being in a household that there's music everywhere. But at what point did you say, you know what, I'm not going to be a poli-sci major. I'm gonna get into music.
I'd always said that from a very young age, that I wanted to do music, and it was always in some way, shape, or form. So it was, I want to be a percussionist. I want to be in a band. And then maybe seventh grade, it fell on hip hop. I want to be a rapper. I want to be a broadening it. Once I started producing, I want to be just an artist. But it was around seventh grade where I realized, you know, I don't want to go to college. Let me finish out high school, and then this is what I want to do. My senior year of high school is when it became like official that everybody in the family was on board with me doing that.
So they weren't on board necessarily earlier on, just because such a young age, just saying, Mom, Dad, can I sit you down for a second? I'm getting into music. I know I'm only 13, but this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, that was the initial conversations of like, I want to be a rapper. They were all like, all right, bro, cool.
Well, they were supportive in the way that they helped with recording equipment. They pushed you in that regard. And they also, and I was just reading about how at one point or another, they just wanted the music to be positive. They didn't really care what you were in. They know that rap has a negative connotation. That's not every rap song, but they wanted you to produce positive music.
Yeah, definitely. You know, while they were skeptical of me pursuing a career in rap, in music, that's not to say that they weren't as supportive of me pursuing something that I loved. You know, I'm so lucky to have parents that invested so heavily into this passion that I have.
All right, we're talking with Kwaku Collins here on The Download. The new album is out, Nat Love. You grew up partially in upstate New York, but you came here to Evanston. You grew up in Evanston. You went to Evanston High School. Talk about that, because it's a little bit outsider in the way that Chicago has a tremendous hip-hop scene right now. You see so many different people coming out of here, from Chance the Rapper to Saba to Mick Jenkins, like all these people, you know, Vink Mensa. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on.
Yeah.
But you don't see yourself as part of that crew, because that's a Chicago crew.
Yeah, I don't claim it if you're not from it. That's really all it comes down to. Like, I know full well that there's a divide between Evanston and Chicago. If you look on a map, it's never going to say Chicago and then, oh, there's just more Chicago up north farther. It goes Chicago and Wilmette. No, it's Chicago, Evanston, everything north of there. So it would just be weird for me to claim Chicago, just because that's not what it is.
What's the hip-hop scene like in Evanston?
It's small, it's budding, but it's getting there. And it's really cool to see. There's a lot of, you see like the lanes that have opened up in Chicago. You can see it growing on a really smaller scale in Evanston.
Are there distinct styles that are different? I mean, being so close to each other, the music and the influences are similar, but are there distinct styles that come out of an Evanston style of hip hop?
I don't know. It's too early to tell. I don't think Evanston has really a distinctive sound, because the Midwest is so musically diverse as a whole. Everything is everything at this point.
You know, you've grown up in Evanston. You've been a part of it. You've found places to be able to produce your work, but also to perform your work in Evanston. Evanston's a college town. It also has North Evanston, South Evanston. There's a lot going on that mirrors Chicago in a way.
Yeah.
But what about that town helps you or helps influence you as an artist?
You can get a little bit of everything in Evanston. And coming up in the neighborhood that I did, everything was there. You know, there's the weird stuff, and then there's it's the good, bad, and the ugly, essentially. Mm-hmm. You can find it in Evanston, and it's not to the scale that it is in Chicago, not to the extremes, but it's still there. And that definitely influenced me as an artist, because I experienced everything coming up in that place.
You've seen an evolution of your career just in such a short amount of time. Like I said, you're 19 years old, so it's even hard to say, but I mean, you've rapped under different monikers, you've done different styles of music. I mean, watching some of the earlier stuff was pretty straight ahead, kind of conscious rap kind of stuff. But listening to what you're doing with Nat Love, much more musical, much more vocal, the vocal stylings. It's not just rap, there's singing, there's things like that. Talk about that evolution, like, because you see a lot of times artists, that takes a whole career for you to make those kind of transitions and mature in such a short amount of time. I mean, we're talking about 2-3 years, we're talking about high school. Do you recognize that? What pushes you forward to keep growing as a musician?
I am a musician. When it really comes down to it, I am a musician. And just the love of making music and my love of music, period, of listening to music, of writing music, of directing what to do with music, just everything music I love. And if I can, if there's any chance that I can become better at doing that, that I can take this farther, that I can get new tools, that I can sharpen the tools that I have, that to me is the most enticing thing of it all. Waking up and doing it again the next morning is just getting better. There's never going to be a best. Like, I'm never going to have a best because I'm always trying to get to that new level.
The new level for you, I mean, obviously being here in Evanston and close to Chicago, because we're seeing so much happen here, not just with the musicians that are coming out, but, you know, you've got festivals, Lollapalooza, Pitchfork, places where we could see you on stage at some point in your career. Do you stay in the Midwest? I mean, as an artist, I mean, do you see yourself moving west to Los Angeles? Do you see yourself getting closer to a more mainstream kind of hip hop music industry?
In the winter, I can kind of see myself in L.A.
Weather aside.
Nah, honestly, I really, there's no place I'd rather be than the Midwest. I like it here for better or for worse. And as much as I would love to just ditch everything and go and live in the mountains as a hermit, this is kind of where I'm at. This is where I belong.
Let's talk about your identity, because, you know, you're biracial.
Yep.
And you talk about that a little bit, you know, always being an outsider.
Mm.
Was it hard for you, especially when it comes to music, to be recognized as one or the other, or accepted by an African-American community or accepted by a white community? Like, does that matter when it talks about the influences on your music?
I never really found it any harder to be accepted musically than it was personally.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't going to be accepted personally by a group of white people, if I wasn't going to be accepted personally by a group of black people, chances are they wouldn't accept me for my music anyways. But, you know, racially, I don't think that that really plays a factor in how people receive the music that I make because of the music that I make. The music speaks for itself. You know, it crosses these genre lines, but also people can hear that it crosses these racial lines in a strange way that translates through my personality. So I don't think it's a big factor.
Let me ask you about the production.
Yes.
Because a lot being made of your use of GarageBand, which is the program that
yeah,
sometimes...
I've since upgraded,
You've upgraded to
Logic.
Oh, there you go. So you're moving on. So you're evolving.
I'm evolving,
But you have spent a lot of time, especially in your high school years, producing your own music, editing your own music, mixing your own stuff. What is it about that? I mean, how hard was it to be able to master that part of being a musician?
I don't want to say that it was necessarily hard, but I put the work in. That was all I did.
How so? So, like, that's what you were doing all the time?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing all the time. If I wasn't out skating, then I was at home working on music or at somebody's house, just thinking about music. I always have music on the brain and mastering that program, because for a while, you're right, I did work on GarageBand, but that was all I would do. It wasn't hard, but there was a lot of hard work involved on that. As far as mixing and mastering and producing all the music, I love being hands-on with the art that I'm making from all aspects. You know, now I don't fully mix and master all my stuff. Right. I don't even master it or do the real good mix. That's Michael Kolar, he does all that, and it's like fire.
Is it hard for you? Is it hard as a musician and artist
no.
to be like, can I get, hey, Mike, what are you doing over there? Can I take a look?
Not at all, because when I produce a track and when I mix it to how I want it to sound, then I give it to him, and he'll just accentuate on it and make it that much better, still using the sound and the aesthetic that I want, the vision that I have it. He just takes it that much farther.
All right, last question, and you mentioned it. You know, I'm fascinated by the influence of the skateboard culture that you come from. I mean, you're in Evanston. You see the skateboarders all over the place, especially downtown Evanston, Chicago. You'll see in a lakefront downtown at night.
Yeah.
And people don't think anything of it. But there is definitely here in Chicago and Evanston, the Midwest, or at least this stretch right here, there's a real dedicated crew that is skating up and and places. How'd you get involved in that, and what influence does that culture have on your music?
Skateboarding, for me, I started skating when I was 7. And I'm the kind of person where when I really, like, fall for something, that's all I want to do. So it's the same thing with skating that it is with music, is that was all I was doing. I was never out. You know, I stopped playing basketball every day because I started skateboarding every day. And that really gave me, that's where I get my work ethic from. Mm. why I'm always trying to work on something, why I'm always trying to create something new, is because I learned for so long about the literal falling down and getting back up,
right,
throwing myself downstairs every day and running back up to the top of the stairs because I didn't land it.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
And so that physical example of what it means to work hard, I could then translate into a slightly less physical manifestation of that lesson through my music. Culturally, skateboarding is very diverse. It's not a racially segregated thing. It's open to everyone, all walks of life, pop culture, punk culture, rap culture, all come together in this melting pot that does become skateboarding. And like, you know, people want to rock their Thrasher t-shirts and not skate, but they don't know anything about that. Like, it's a very deep and a very rich thing.
Yeah.
And that again translates into me and my personality and feeds into my music.
Do you find yourself just forever going to be a skateboarder?
Oh yeah.
Forever?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love it. Kwaku Collins, the new record is Nat Love. It's a first from the Evanston hip hop artist. I want to thank you so much for coming in and talk with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck,
man,
with everything, man.
Thank you very much.
After 8 years of honor flights for World War II vets, veterans of the Korean War joined their ranks for the first time. That's tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9. All right, coming up, Picnic. That's right, Saturday night. It is Tuesday night. It feels like a Saturday night, you know?
Does it?
It doesn't. I was actually getting confused about our next segment where I'm going to be emceeing Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
At the NAMI DuPage Shine a Light Gala. Angela Adkins is going to join us right after the break. She's the executive director of the National Alliance of Mental Illness DuPage. They're having their big spring party, their fundraiser, at the Marriott in Naperville. And I am emceeing.
That's great.
On Saturday. Yeah. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun time. It's Star Wars themed.
Are you going to dress up as Darth Vader?
Do you think I should? Like, do you think that that's part of the... Maybe I should ask Angela to come up here. Like, is that... Like, that would be completely ridiculous if I were like, oh, my God, I thought this was a Halloween. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm a stormtrooper. I'm so sorry. That's probably not what they want from the MC. I need to talk to Jeannie because I need to know what the attire situation is for a gala,
yeah,
at the Marriott in Naperville.
Do you have to wear a tux?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about because I'll be honest with you. The tux I have is probably a little small.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 10 years old. And I don't know where the Genghis is anymore. I don't even know if they have those stores anymore. Where do you go to get a tux?
Yeah,
yeah, right? And do you still wear the cummerbund? I don't know. These are questions. No, I don't think you have to. I don't think it's a black tie event. I think that would be like, wouldn't that just be straight front and center, like black tie?
Yeah. But as the MC...
Well, I'm worried about it. I should chalk. I need.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Because maybe I could borrow like Rokan's. You know, he seems to be in a tuxedo half the time. He's always dressed up
nicely.
He's got a little pocket square,
yeah,
and he's always getting dressed, ready to go somewhere when the show's over. So maybe
good.
I can just. Maybe I don't even need to ask him. I'll just go to his
check
office.
The closet. Yeah.
Check the closet. Maybe three tuxes that are hanging. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to do the Picnic. This is where we pick nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox. We're expanding it. Tonight, we're going to do Cubs. We did Cubs last week, and we did Dexter Fowler, and we did Justin Grimm. Grimm, we did the Grim Reaper, which is really his nickname, so we kept that. But we liked what was tacked on. Grim Reaper, it's harvest time. And then Martyr came up with probably the best one ever, which was the, for Dexter Fowler, Free Range.
So good. Using it all weekend. Just making it stick.
Right?
Making it stick.
That's what you have to do, Download Nation. Every time he makes a play, he gets on base, Free Range.
Yep.
See, I've been neglecting my news duties tonight because I've been really trying to come up with something for Javier Baez. And I'm trying to tie it in with J&B Scotch, but it's not working. So I might have to abandon that and go a different route.
The good news is Matt Klein will be here. He's one of the ensemble members of the Cubs Fan Jam from last summer, and he'll have all the details on the career, the stats, the personal information, the trivia, if you will, for Javi Baez. So he'll help people along the way. 312-981-7200. We're doing that at 10 o'clock. It's Picnic, Javier Baez, and Kyle Hendricks. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this Saturday the 14th, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, DuPage, is having their big spring event at the Marriott in Naperville. I'll be there hosting the Shine a Light Gala. It's a fundraiser for NAMI DuPage, which offers support, education, and advocacy for individuals with mental illness, along with their families and caregivers. On the line with me is Angela Adkins, who's the executive director of NAMI DuPage. Ms. Adkins, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's talk about this. You know, I don't know much about NAMI, and I'm excited to be there. How much of a need is there for mental illness agencies and services in DuPage County?
There's a huge need. And in actual fact, NAMI is probably the only organization in the county that really works with both the individual that has a mental illness and the families. And the two are really important because if you don't have a supported and engaged and educated family and caregivers, then it's very, very difficult for the individual to really do well in their own recovery.
It's interesting because you guys don't take fund, you're not funded by the state. I mean, you're a private organization. but talk about, like, how hard is it to get people to be able to help, you know, with what you guys are doing, especially in DuPage County?
You know, it's incredibly hard. We, you know, people understand starving children, and rightly so, and they understand homelessness. But we always call mental illness, unless the behavior gives it away, it's an invisible illness. And we also call it the no casserole illness. People really rally around anybody that has cancer or heart condition or diabetes. But when it's a biological brain disorder, a mental illness, they're not so quick to come to somebody's aid. And a lot of that is, of course, a lack of education, a lack of understanding. I don't think it's once people do understand and they get it, there's a lot of empathy. But the education part is incredibly important.
Yeah, you guys do a lot of educational trainings for police officers, for corporations, for libraries, for all sorts of people. When you're doing the training, you're essentially getting those people to understand what mental illness looks like.
Exactly. We will educate on the signs and the symptoms, what mental illness is and what it isn't. There's a lot of people jump to the conclusion that somebody with a mental illness is developmentally challenged. And while, of course, that population do indeed have mental illness, that's not what it is. You can have some of the most brilliant minds that unfortunately have a biological brain disorder, their chemistry imbalance, and that will then be diagnosed with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or depression. Major depression is a huge cause of devastation within families and the work environment.
There's so many interesting things with NAMI DuPage. One of it is social recreation. When we talk about people with mental illness and the way that you help them at NAMI, one of the big things is social recreation, because people with mental illness tend to self-isolate.
They do. If you think about it logically, if somebody is diagnosed with a mental illness, or they have some issues in their late high school life, perhaps do a year of college, which is indeed what happened with our daughter, dropped out, and then they find they're falling further and further behind. Their peers are graduating from college, getting their first jobs, getting into their first relationships, and often the individual that has a mental illness is still sitting at home. They may be doing some community college, but finding it a struggle to get a job. And because of all of that, and because of the stigma that still sadly surrounds mental illness, they do tend to self-isolate. And one of the things that we find with our recreational programs is that they love the fact that it's a completely safe, non-judgmental environment. And probably most importantly, it's not another doctor's appointment.
Right.
It's not another therapist appointment. It's something that, they can go out and forget that they're any different from anybody else and just really enjoy. And we find that people love to play music. They love to do art. not in an art therapy format, but just to do art for art's sake. Theater, then yoga. I mean, the possibilities are really endless.
With people with mental illness, you know, when mental health symptoms override them, or they find themselves in situations where those symptoms are exacerbated, a lot of times they'll go to the emergency room, or people say, "You got to go get help. You have to do this," and that's not necessarily the best place, because the way that the treatment has set up there, that's a place where you want to get in, get out. It's also extremely expensive. It goes along the idea with police officers that those hospitals sometimes aren't equipped for that. Sometimes police aren't equipped for someone who's having a breakdown. But with you guys, you're almost acting like an ER with what you guys are doing with the living room concept. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we're incredibly excited. There have been a number of living rooms that have started, but they're still very, very, very small amount of them. So when we moved into this new community center in a partnership with the DuPage County and the DuPage County Health Department, we wanted to start a living room, which, as you say, is an alternative to the emergency rooms. And when somebody comes to the living room, and they may be brought in by a family member, they may bring themselves, because now word is really spreading. They will be given a very short interview by a healthcare professional, and then, assuming that it is safe for them to be in the living room rather than have to go to the hospital, they will then be handed over to a trained peer specialist who they themselves have mm-hmm. have a diagnosed mental illness and are doing very well in their recovery.
How important is it to have peer specialists, people who have had experiences or family members with mental illness?
It's crucial. And we, you know, our peers and our clients will say all the time that, you know, it's wonderful if you have, you know, if you're able to find a really good psychiatrist that you get along with, a good therapist. But until you start working with a peer, or go to a peer support group, or go to you know, peer one-on-one counseling, you know, that sort of finishes off the whole circle and really rounds it out, because they really can say, you know, I know exactly what you're going through. If somebody is going through a mania and has, you know, sort of heightened anxiety, you know, very fast, rapid thoughts, you know, that peer really does know how to hit those relevant points and make that person understand that they really do indeed get it.
Obviously, there has been a lot with the state of Illinois and the budget impasse. And even before that, mental health clinics in the city of Chicago were closed because of budget cuts. There seems to be less and less funding and opportunity at the state-sponsored level for people with mental health issues. That's where NAMI DuPage comes in. How important is it to make sure that there are clinics, there are opportunities, and places like NAMI DuPage in the Illinois area?
Oh, it's crucial. And not to sort of get into a history lesson, but obviously, as most people are aware, that in the, you know, mid-60s, a lot of the hospitals closed, and a lot of those folks were essentially put out on the streets. And so without those clinics, without those places for people to go, a lot of these folks will end up homeless. They're wandering around the streets. They're not getting the treatment and the therapy and the medication that they need. And so, yes, their symptoms do just mm-hmm. increase. They end up, it's a vicious circle. And as we know, unfortunately, far too many people with a mental illness do end up in the jail system.
Yeah, right.
It's a crucial part of somebody's well-being.
Well, Shine a Light Gala is going to be on Saturday, May 14th at the Marriott in Naperville. It's a fundraiser for the NAMI DuPage. That's the National Alliance of Mental Illness, DuPage County. Angela Adkins is the executive director. Angela, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Picnic, where we are going to pick nicknames for the 2016 Cubs. We've been doing this now this will be our second week. It was a huge success last week. Martyr came through. Esmeralda chose the winners. It was a strong team effort to give Dexter Fowler his brand new nickname, Free Range. That's a good one. Tonight, we're doing Javier Baez and Kyle Hendricks. Matt Klein's going to be here from the famed Cubs Fan Jam ensemble from last year. He's going to be the color commentary. He's going to give us some interesting tidbits, facts, figures for both players so we can help figure out nicknames, authentic, legitimate nicknames for these guys. 312-981-7200. And to sweeten the deal, if we choose your nickname, you win a prize. We're giving away tickets to the big soccer match at Soldier Field. We'll also give away the $50 gift certificate to the Builder Supply Outlet. So, yeah, we have prizes as well. So it's not just – I mean, just think about it. You're like, I have the greatest nickname for Javi Baez. I should tell WGN about it next hour. Wow, I got free stuff for it. It's a pretty simple concept. 312-981-7200. How are the Cubs doing tonight?
Winning 8-3.
Wow, the Sox are tied in the fourth. Two outs, Melky Cabrera at bat, bases loaded. Both Chicago teams, of course, killing it. And you know what? We had decided, you know, and we sort of had this nickname idea. My buddy Tommy had kind of thrown it out, and it was all about the Cubs because the Cubs just started out strong. And you're but the Sox have come on, and they've come on. That this has to be a citywide thing. We need to do White Sox as well.
Can't shake them.
I mean, there's too many good... Melky Cabrera, right?
Yeah.
Right off the bat, you're like, oh, that's so juicy, so milky, right? Milky Way, right?
You got to.
Milk, you know? I know there's some good stuff. Todd Frazier, he needs a nickname bad. He's kind of like, he reminds me, he's the most sort of 1930s baseball player that the Sox have.
Ah.
Like when he comes out, his jersey's a little too big. You know, he's got that look, and he's got a very, like, upright batting stance, you know, so he kind of has it. He doesn't, like, he's got the pants that go all the way down to the shoes, so there's no socks showing. So there's a lot there. But tonight we're doing Cubs, so Javi Baez and Kyle Hendricks.
Awesome.
Tomorrow night on the show, I'm psyched about this. It's sort of like the book expo's in town. So we're going to have some pretty hot YA authors on the show.
How about that?
Remember our friend Betsy Bird from up at the Evanston Public Library? She came here from New York, from the Manhattan Public Library. We had a great talk with her. She's been
great.
On a couple times talking about. Well, she is a part of it, and she's going to bring some of the YA authors over to the studio tomorrow night after their big event. And we're going to have a chance to jam, so that'll be fun. That's coming up tomorrow night. Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff. Also, I'm excited because we're going to talk with the Chicago Sky's first round pick.
How about that?
Last year, the Sky was I really liked the Sky. Went to the game.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
we had the coach in here.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of this guy. And as any fan, if I'm going to be consistent with my sporting love here in Chicago, you best do better, right? Last year was not a good year for the Sky. They were bounced in the first round. A tough team they had to play. But at the same time, you know, the year before they went to the finals and lost. This is a year where you hope that they can rebound.
Step up. Yep.
No pun intended. And get back to where they were. Because there were times last year where there were streaks, especially with Deladon, where they were on fire. They were the team to beat, the Chicago Sky. So.
Isn't she pretty much the best player in the league, or one of the best players?
She's the Michael Jordan of the WNBA.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. The numbers she put up were... You know who she reminds me of? She reminds me of Dirk Nowitzki.
Hmm.
She's got the same kind of game where she can drive and take her defender one-on-one. She can step back. She can hit the jumper. She's the leader of that team. And she also does things that you're just like, wow, man, amazing that she was able to get the space for that shot. It's like anytime Dirk Nowitzki's in a game... with like 15 seconds and they're down 8, the game's not safe.
Yeah.
Like he can score 8 points like that. The old Reggie Miller. So we'll talk with, and then we have great stuff this week. It's going to be a fun week.
It's fun doing these 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
Haven't done that in a while.
That's right. You know, this time last year, we started the show.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate to ride along with the Chicago Blackhawks as they went to the Stanley Cup. That was great. It was great, too, as we sort of eased into it.
Right, exactly.
We were only doing, like, 3 shows a week. This year, they got bounced first round, and they're like, Kaufman, get in there. So I'm in.
As I predicted to that one texter who was always mad at me that I predicted they would lose.
So mad. They were so mad at you.
Because I played hockey when I was from 5 to 12.
What do you know about it? And you predicted, although you said the Hawks would lose in five.
I did.
Something like that, right?
Yeah. Bold.
Yeah, big news out of the NBA tonight. The Oklahoma City Thunder beat the Spurs. That's great. I mean, they were pretty much crowning the San Antonio Spurs as now with Steph Curry's injury, even though he's back now. It was going to be the series. They just needed to dispatch these teams. Will the Thunder now take a 3-2 lead in that series going back to Oklahoma City? Now, it's the San Antonio Spurs. They'll figure it out, I'm sure. And you do not want to lose if you're Oklahoma City, because then it goes back to San Antonio where they've only lost three times. And I wouldn't want to take out Tim Duncan and Tony Parker in a game seven, but.
Is this going to be the end of the Spurs? I mean, I don't think
they had an unbelievable year. I mean, they were overshadowed by the Golden State Warriors, of course. But, I mean, what a great year for a team that's aging. I mean, their three stars, their big stars, LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard. Uh-huh. Those guys are the new stars. But then you still got Tony Parker. You still got Ginobili. You still got Tim Duncan. So there you go. I mean, they had 67 wins.
That's incredible. Never
hear about it. Well, and also they play in San Antonio, so what can you do? do you see that they're heating up the Jimmy Butler, Gar Foreman? I saw a couple more stories today about...
on the block?
Yeah, they're like, is there going to be a showdown between the Bulls star, Jimmy Butler, and their GM? And if they do come to blows in the offseason, who goes? It's a great question. Because Jimmy Butler is I think for Bulls fans, you're sort of like, well, you haven't really done anything. You've played well, but at the same time, you've also, I don't know, like you've done a lot of talking. You know, you're fighting with your coach, you're fighting with your star, Derrick Rose, you're fighting with the GM now. A lot of talking. You know, on the other hand, Gar Foreman has not done well with the ushering out of Coach Tibbs and the anointing Fred Hoiberg as the man, even though they didn't make the playoffs. What team in the NBA doesn't make the playoffs? That's the thing I don't understand about this whole, and I keep getting angry about it, but I'm like, there's no situation in which a team in the NBA East doesn't make the playoffs. Those are all the teams that are rebuilding, that are playing for draft picks. You don't miss the 8 seed if you're the Chicago Bulls with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler. That's ridiculous. Nothing has changed.
I mean, think about how fun it would be if we had the Bulls in the playoffs, the Hawks going.
They'd be playing right now it's the Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors. It's the same as I watch in hockey. The Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues. And I'm like, oh, come on. San Jose and Nashville. The Nashville Predators are forcing a game seven.
Like a wild card team.
Don't get me started on
Do they call them a wild card team in hockey?
They're
one of the last two teams to make it in.
Yeah.
The Preds.
They shouldn't be there. Just based on principle.
You hate Nashville.
I hate the Nashville Predators.
Or the Predators, yeah.
I love Nashville, the town of Nashville, but they should get rid of that.
And the TV show.
They should go back to the AHL. And I love the TV show. I mean, Hayden Panettiere. I mean, come on. Is she on the show? One time, I'll end here, that I was in Nashville, and I tried to get into a bar. It was like the cocktail bar in town. Like the high-end cocktail bar. And I was with a friend. It was a birthday party. And we went over there, and there was a line. Or the bouncer's like, you can't come in. The cast of Nashville's in here. And you're like, wait, the cast of Nashville is in the Nashville bar, and I can't come in? That's ridiculous, right? I was like, come on. If the cast of Chicago PD was in a bar here, they wouldn't say, yeah, you guys, you can't come in. Closed. Cast of Chicago Med's in here. The guys from Third Watch are in here. You can't. Closed. That's ridiculous, right? Like, who cares if the cast of Nashville's in there? Anyway. All right, so coming up, Picnic. You ready? I'm ready. Zim's got it right. A little Purple Haze, a little Jimi Hendrix, a little Kyle Hendrix. I get it. It's time for Picnic. This is our segment we do every Tuesday to give the whole entire Chicago Cubs roster a nickname, a legitimate, authentic, real deal nickname for every player, coach, equipment manager, parking attendant, bouncer, peanut guy, licorice rope guy, cotton candy guy. This is all about the Download Nation. 312-981-7200. Call or text your ideas for nicknames. And if your idea is the one we choose, you win a prize. Tonight, we've got two great prizes. A pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. Also, a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. All for picking nicknames. In studio, our judge, Matt Klein. Matt is one of the Cubs Fan Jam Ensemble members who brought us such joy last summer. Matt, good to see you.
Good to see you, my friend.
All right, great to have you here in studio as well. All right, you know what? Let's introduce the players in which we will be giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to. One is tonight's third baseman, Javi Baez. Javier Baez, of course, utility player who's seen a lot more time on the diamond thanks to the injury to Kyle Schwarber. But Javi Baez was one of these guys who you really, I mean, last year, the year before, we're like, when's Baez coming up,
right,
man?
Right.
Ship Castro,
when are we
going
to see? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we need to get this guy, we need to get this bat in. He can hit the ball to the moon. All we kept hearing about was his AAA home runs that were, you know, going 540 feet.
So far, a lot of strikeouts, but to his credit, he did come through with a big, big Mother's Day walk-off home run in the extra innings to give the Cubs the sweep of the Nationals. So a lot going on there. Also tonight, fifth starter, Kyle Hendricks. Hendricks, of course, was on the team last year. He continues to be in the rotation for the Cubs now. He's kind of known to be kind of a smart pitcher.
He's a very intelligent guy, Dartmouth graduate. I know we're trying to pick nicknames for these guys, but we might as well get out of the way that he already has the moniker of the professor.
That's his nickname.
That is his nickname, but let's give him a new one.
No, that's a dumb one.
Yeah, I don't like that one at all.
Chicago,
it's easy.
There's already a professor.
It's easy.
In Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't Brad Palmer the professor on Channel 7? You can't be the professor. You can't just take that.
Exactly.
Like, at least with Justin Grimm, you're like Grim Reaper. All right, okay, so we get it. But with Hendricks, we need a new one. So 312-981-7200. Pete Zimmerman, what are you thinking tonight? Do you think this is an easy one or a hard one for people?
I think it's going to be an easy one.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are players, you know, you're not digging too deep in the roster. I mean, these are players that you watch quite a bit.
So you know their tendencies, you know what kind of player they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to get to, you know, the Rizzos and the Bryants and the Joe Maddons and all that kind of stuff later as we get closer to primetime. These are like the starters.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the...
Well, Baez, I think, is going to be a big part of this team now. I mean, he's showing an exceptional glove at third base, you know, pretty much forcing Bryant out to left. You know, we're going to see a lot of Baez coming up here, so he's going to be a big part of this
team. Maybe there's something there, like, you know, like maybe we can give him like a hot corner kind of
nickname, we could do that.
All right, so let's see. All right, so I've got people coming in. Let's try it. Let's 630 says Mr. T. Because Baez wears a ton of gold chains.
He does wear a ton of gold out there. I've always been fascinated by all those players that wear all that jewelry out there.
I don't know why you would do that.
You have a locker.
Right.
I don't understand how that's not a part of just the pregame before you head out to the
field. They know
the
they're on TV, so they want to look good.
I guess. I mean, that's what you need to look good is a big, huge honking chain that has to be getting in the way.
I think it's superstition. What do you guys think?
You think it's superstition?
These guys are so superstitious that if they get on a hot streak, and let's say they're wearing that big gold boxing glove.
I could see that.
Right.
They're going to keep wearing it.
All right.
So that probably explains why the pitchers wear like the more like hemp necklace. They're like, that looks really bad. No, I won a game in college. I'm just going to keep it on. All right. 847's got a good one. Okay. For Javi Baez, a.k.a. Breeze. Says Breeze.
The breeze created by his swing?
Yep.
Is that what was
takes a big
suggested?
Cut,
yeah.
Takes a big cut, moves some air. Breeze. What do you think of that, Martyr?
That's okay. That's okay.
All right, what do you got?
I don't think it's as good as mine, though.
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to throw down the gauntlet here. I did a little research on this, all right? Javi Baez attended Arlington Country Day School in Jacksonville, Florida.
All right.
Their nickname is the Apache.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with Javier the Apache Baez.
The Apache.
The Apache.
The Apache for Javi Baez.
I like it. I like it.
It conjures
up something menacing.
Yeah.
You know, I think to Quentin Tarantino's great movie Inglourious Bastards, Aldo the Apache. You know, the Apache.
The Apache.
I love it.
Carries a tomahawk at the plate.
Right.
I love it. Especially now that you've referenced Inglourious Bastards, I think that's incredible.
All right. Well, let's keep going. Let's go to the phones. The Apache is a clear favorite from Martyr. Bonnie, what do you like for Javi Baez?
Okay. I had a hard time with this one. I had a few pretty corny ones. But the one I came up with is Dino for Javi for Dino Baez.
Dino Baez.
Dino Baez.
Why Dino Baez? Dino Baez.
Yeah,
because he's going to be dynamite.
Okay.
She
brought it together there. She.
I have faith in him.
That is good. I do. Thank you, Bonnie, for that one.
Yeah. It's really stupid.
I think it's. It is stupid.
Maybe it'll grow on
us. Good work.
It could grow on us.
I do like it. It's infectious. I like your energy. I like what you're bringing to the table.
I'm bringing the energy to all the games. So
there you go.
They're still playing, so I've been trying to listen to your program and listen to the game.
Well, this is it. Yeah, they got their
action. I know.
It's getting tight.
I know. The fog moved in, and now it's kind of close. So anyway, I'm still calling him Dino. That's my, Dynamite.
I like it. All right. Thanks,
That's
Bonnie.
That's what I mean.
Thank you for that.
He's going to be good.
There you go.
Yeah, she's into it. She's into it.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do more Picnic. We haven't even got to Kyle Hendricks yet. A lot flowing in for Javi Baez. We will get to those nicknames when we return. It's Picnic here on The Download. Stay with us. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gone. Go Cubs go indeed. The Chicago Cubs with the victory tonight at Wrigley Field, Woo! Beating the San Diego Padres 8-7 to win their eighth straight. How about that? It's becoming pretty...
It's crazy.
It's almost borderline surreal. Comical in the way that you're like, really? Are we going to do this? Are you going to win 130 games here?
Well, I mean, just that seven-game sweep, we just went into Pittsburgh. And then hosted the Nationals. And when that series started, we started that series, they were the second-best team in the National League record-wise. And in those seven games, three at Pittsburgh, four at Wrigley Field, we outscored them 45-21. You know, I mean, we expected good things, but this is crazy.
There's only one team left that I feel like the Cubs just have to conquer mentally, and that's the New York Mets.
It's the Mets, for sure.
And because the Mets are still hanging around. They started a little – they do – like any regular baseball team, they started normal.
Right.
You know?
Well, and they're
– And now they're in the lead in the NL.
Their four starters are elite. Yeah. You know, obviously, Jake Arrieta, I would take him over anybody in the game right now. But to go up against DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats – and who
Harvey.
Am I forgetting? And Harvey in a series is just, I mean, that's tough, man. That is a gauntlet.
But have no fear because we have Kyle Hendricks.
that's right.
Tonight at Picnic, we are coming up with nicknames for both Kyle Hendricks and I guess all around infielder utility player Javi Baez. Let's get to some of the nicknames that are coming in. Obviously, this is for prizes for a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field. And a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet. Let's nickname for Baez. 773 says Javier Bye Bye Baez.
Okay.
Bye Bye.
I saw that one earlier actually when I was doing some research as far as like nicknames that people already had for him. That was one of few that was listed. I don't know.
That's a negative connotation, like bye bye.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know, but I get it. Leaving the park kind of thing.
It's no Apache. I'll tell you that right now.
Surprisingly, Rob, there are some people on the text line that are like, that's offensive. They're giving the a little bit, you know, like we're already past the Illini and the Blackhawks stuff. Why add to it?
It's not offensive because a lot of names in Florida are after Indians or Indian tribes or some sort of Indian reference, and they have been cleared. In most cases, by the particular tribe or the Indians that they're trying to represent.
Right.
It's only to honor the great right. Native Americans in that particular part of the
You're
country.
Preaching to the choir. I'm just letting
That's all I'm
be.
Saying.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Preach.
8474. Let's stay on bias. I'll get to the other ones. Bay. That's pretty good. Bay, like
B A E.
Yeah, B A E for the ladies.
Yeah. Okay.
As in Bay, which stands for before all else. Before all else.
Okay.
So Baez, Javier Baez's nickname is Bay.
What about
Hey Bay.
Get
hit a home run, Bay. I don't know if that works. That could.
No, it does.
Doesn't work?
It does not work.
All right, keep going. What do you got?
Let's see.
214's got a good one. Javi Boo Boo. Like Honey Boo Boo?
Yeah, Javi Boo Boo.
Javi Boo Boo.
I could work with that. How about, I took this from my fantasy, you know, like Flex, you know, like a utility type.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's called Flex. It's got That's some great. Guns, too, you know.
Flex so, is not
I,
bad.
I like minimal
Yeah, because you want to say fast.
One, yeah, Flex, you know.
Free range to Flex.
Free. I love free range. By the way, is Martier going to go to that soccer match? Did he win the tickets?
Not. We did not give it to him. We gave no. it to somebody else, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There's some good ones here. 847, pepper spray, because he's a spray hitter.
Okay.
Habanero pepper, because I guess he's Latin. Right.
How about the galloping garbanzo? What do you think about that name?
The garbanzo.
Garbanzo's big in Puerto Rican food.
Okay. So
it's kind of a chickpea, I think, the garbanzo.
Yeah.
And I just like galloping. It harkens the old-timey names, right. You know, like for no reason.
Like it's what you'd write in a newspaper.
Right.
Galloping garbanzo, right. Right.
Yeah. So I like Apache. I don't know. Galloping garbanzo. What else do we do?
Well, let's see. I think that there was... I like Flex. That's good.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the one that I like the most. This one's coming from Tommy. This one's good. Babyface.
Babyface.
Baez kind of has a baby face. He looks like a young kid.
Yeah.
Babyface.
And it's one of those names that rolls through the name, too. Javi Babyface Baez.
Right, exactly.
Right.
That's kind of good. He also has the tweez.
The tweez.
Because he gets his eyebrows tweezed.
And by the way, I'm a little floored that I didn't find that in my research for these players today.
Sometimes it's on look. You just got to look.
You know what? That sounds like a Deshays or Casper thing that they brought up during a broadcast or something.
Well, all right. What are you thinking, Pete? What do you like right now?
I don't know.
All right.
Nothing. I mean, nothing's popping out. I mean, they're all okay.
All right. Well, let's try the phones. Joe, you're on. What do you like for Picnic? What do you like for Javi Baez?
Cajon Baez.
Cajon.
Cajon.
Yeah, okay. Like cojones.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Javi's got some cojones.
All right.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. Thanks for that, Joe. We appreciate that.
I'll write that down.
I'm not sure that one holds.
Cojones.
Javier 708's got Javier Hot Pocket Baez.
Okay.
Because of all of his great catches. Hot Pocket.
Hot Pocket. All right. Arm and Hammer. Let's see. A play on third base somewhere, maybe.
815's got for Javi Baez, Bam Bam.
Okay.
That's not a bad one. I kind of like that. That's got a little Flintstones. You know, maybe he's a young guy. Bam Bam. You know?
Okay. Well, he's a young guy.
That's all.
23. Let's see.
847 says Awesome Sauce.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you could apply that to anybody.
Yeah.
There's really no play on his name or ethnicity in any way.
Okay. All right, that's pretty much what I have here for all the Baez, I think,
okay.
So far. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll get to the news here. When we come back, we'll concentrate on Kyle Hendricks. And Javi Baez is still in play. We thought we would wrap it up. I like Flex. I like Apache. I also like Babyface. And you know what? A little part of me likes
Babyface Bay. Babyface is growing on me, actually, yeah.
A little part of me likes Bay. You know,
okay.
There's a little part of me that's
we'll
like,
keep it open.
Hey, Bay.
We'll keep it open.
Where you at, Bay? Just want to hear Len Casper like Bay with the stack. Nice play, Bay. All right, we're doing Picnic here.
Bay bare hands and throws to first.
Bay. Javi Baez and Kyle Hendricks are getting nicknames tonight on Picnic. Stay with us. Doesn't Javi Baez come off the bench a lot? Like, is he a guy who, like, is kind of, he's not starting every game, he's playing around?
Yeah, kind of like a Listella thing.
So there's something, maybe there's a bench, kind of bench mob kind of thing in there, you know, like that you could do bench Baez.
Can you do, like, sixth man?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, steal from a different game, you know, almost like the third corner. Yeah. Nickel. Right? Nickel Baez. No Joan Baez jokes yet. It's too bad. Did you add one?
Cajon Baez.
Oh,
what is it?
That was the that
Cajon
was,
Baez.
That was he. That,
is that what that one was?
Yeah, I didn't get that. Yeah. I didn't get that. Oh, I just because the way he said it, he's like Cajon. Okay.
We totally didn't.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I thought Cajon. Okay, I get it. Cajon. Well, think about bench. Yeah. Think about coming off the bench, sixth man, nickel corner, different sports, third line, whatever it is. Javi Baez, we're still searching for. It's still up in the air. If you got a good nickname at home, you can swoop in and win the prizes tonight. 312-981-7200. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're doing Picnic tonight where we're giving Cubs, the entire 2016 Cubs roster, nicknames, legit, authentic nicknames. And if you are the one who chooses it, you get a prize, giving away tickets to the big Munich, what is it, the AC Milan, yeah, I lost the sheet, but yeah, here it is.
Bayern Munich,
right. Are playing each other on the 27th of July at Soldier Field. We'll give away a pair of tickets to that. And you got a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlets. All right, let's go to the phone. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, what do you like? What do you like as a nickname for Javi Baez?
I like Bambino.
Bambino.
Spelled B-E-A-N-O.
Come on, man. Thank you, Bruce. Not sure. That's just, I'm not sure, that's really not, when I say authentic, legitimate, I think spelling out Beano, B-E-A-N-O, doesn't do the trick. All right, let's go to Carol. Carol, what do you like? You like Javi? You got one for Javi?
Yeah, I do. I want the Javinator.
Oh, the Javinator.
The Javinator.
That's like, you just went like Arnold Schwarzenegger on that one. You just put an eater on the back of anything, right? Any of those guys.
You can't put an eater on anything, yeah. The Javinator.
The Javinator.
All right,
I like that. Carol, thanks, Carol. Thank you for that. Cut her off. Sorry about that, Carol. Okay, so Carrie Becker on Twitter says, how about Hot Hand Javi?
Hot Hand Javi. I like that.
708 says, Baby Cub.
No. Absolutely not. No. By the way, how about so we totally spaced on Cajon Baez.
That was so good.
Yeah,
it's such a good one. Now.
Now it's like it's skyrocketing.
But he just said Cajon.
Well, no, right? Like, he didn't sell it well.
Yeah, he didn't sell it well.
How about Cajon?
Exactly. How about Cajon? Okay.
But Cajon Baez.
Cajon Baez is pretty good. But as a nickname, that's great. As like a pun, like for a sportscaster. Right. But it's tough to be like, all right, two guys on, let's get Cajon Baez up.
Right.
It's not really, doesn't really scream successful right. Chicago Cubs player. Matandolo.
Matandolo.
That means killing it in Spanish. That's okay. 6-3-0. Matandolo. Javi Matandolo. Jalapeno.
Jalapeno.
I think they're going for the same Javi Baez.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's Jalapeno.
I'm looking at some old Cubs names right now.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham Lincoln Sweetbread Bailey.
So, yeah, we're not the first. Okay. Javi Naguila Baez. He's a Jewish Puerto Rican, right?
Yes.
That's what 6312. Baez is a Jewish name.
It is a Jewish surname. It is of Arabic. What's the word? It's like, Arabic.
Yeah. It's got roots.
What is it? Javi Naguila?
They're just Javi Naguila, get it?
I like that.
Yeah, that's good. Naguila, yeah. But if he's not Jewish, then that doesn't work. Because you're not going to say Javi Naguila.
For the sake of this segment, can we just say that Javi Baez is Jewish? Yeah.
We've got 815 saying, my mother watches all the games and calls Baez the hot tamale.
Okay.
That's not bad. I like that. You're right. The Javi Nagila is pretty good.
Javi Nagila is really, I think that's exceptional.
That's really good.
I'm looking through Joan Baez's playlist here, guys, and one of her songs is called Silky.
Okay.
As in Silky Smooth.
Martier is good at this game.
That is, man. Silky.
He's going to have a whole section at that soccer game, I think.
I'm going to be sitting by myself. What are you talking about?
Esmeralda, what do you think of that? I mean, that takes a lot, though, if you think about it. That's like you got to go deep, but at least there's a great origin story there.
I mean, yeah, but then what are you going to explain the origin story every time? Because, yeah, no, it's a deep cut.
Let's go Silky. And you're like, why Silky? Yeah. Well, on Joan Baez's fourth record, she on the ninth track, it's actually a B-side.
Yeah, yeah.
That
see,
might be tough.
It's a little, maybe for the Joan Baez Cub fans.
Not her early 60s, a little bit more mid to late 60s.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it was that period where she was...
she was working out on a hammer dulcimer. She was trying some electric stuff. All right, let's see. Should we move on? Maybe let's keep going. Let's go to Emilio. Emilio, what do you like? Emilio, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
All right. Emilio, what do you like? What do you like for Baez?
I think the triple B will be fine since he plays third base. Talking about Bam Baez.
Bam Bam Baez. That's the second one I've heard for that. Thanks, Emilio. That's good. I like that. Bam Bam Baez.
Bam Bam Baez.
Like Bam Bam, like a play, like you're on the hot corner. Bam
Absolutely.
Bam, what a play. He made a great play. Wow, that was so fast.
Okay, all right.
Bam Bam, he hit a home run like that. Wham Bam.
That doesn't crack the top five. I don't think so.
Klein, you have no love for the Baez nicknames.
Well, no, I do. I think it's pretty darn good.
All right, let's try Kyle Hendrick. Kyle Hendricks, of course, we know as the fifth starter for the Cubs. What do we know about him? He's a smart guy. You said he went to Dartmouth.
He's a smart guy.
But on the field, like, he's known to be a brainy kind of player.
He's a brainy guy, very cerebral player, kind of player that Joe Maddon loves. Joe Maddon often says he doesn't have to say anything or do anything with Kyle Hendricks, just kind of lets him off into his own little world. Mm. And, he's a guy that we've had now for 3 years. We got him in the Ryan Dempster trade. He's a tall drink of water. 6'3", okay. 190, very slim build. Has some plus off-speed pitches.
Okay.
You know, curve, nice little cutter.
Cutter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
773's got one for Hendricks, Madman, a Christina Hendricks reference.
Okay. His middle name is Christian.
Christian.
Yeah, Kyle Christian Hendricks.
847 says for Hendricks, Voodoo Child.
Okay. I like playing on the Jimi Hendrix thing. Yeah, we got, what could you do there? Winnie Hendrix or Wind Cries Harry. Hey Joe. I mean, just simple.
Hey Joe. All right. Let's
I don't know. What about the brain or...
Yeah, that could work, like, because he is kind of known. I've always felt that he's the Scott Sanderson of this squad. He looks the same. He's kind of like at that posture.
Yeah.
He's got the posture. Maybe there's a posture something in there with
Hendricks.
He's got good posture. The tall, straight back
he
kind
does.
Of posture.
Well, he's just very, and he's just, you know, he's just so even keel. Like, I don't think I would enjoy a night out with Kyle Hendricks. You know, like, I don't.
What about, this comes in here, because he's an Ivy League guy.
Okay.
Ivy. With the Ivy and the...
maybe something with Dartmouth.
Yeah, like Dartmouth, like darts. What do you say when you get a perfect dart?
How about Jimmy Neutron?
Jimmy Neutron.
Okay.
Bad, but his name's Kyle. That's a freaky name.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Hmm. Kyle. Doogie? No, or...
Doogie Howser.
I like that.
The Rooster. Good. Hendrix. Hen.
Okay.
That could be good. That's always good.
I'm trying to think of some sort of Hendrix gin angle. I can't really think of anything there.
319 says the Watchtower. That's not bad.
Actually, I like that.
Right?
It plays on Jimi Hendrix and his 6'3".
Yeah, he's
his
tall,
height.
Watchtower.
Yeah, the Watchtower.
Yeah, it's not bad. Kyle Plain Jane Hendrix.
Okay.
6'3". 224, the Calculator. Oh!
Boom.
I like that. The Calculator.
The Abacus.
I love the. He's like, I don't want to be called the calculator.
The calculator.
Called the calculator if you're an athlete.
Oh, I like Calculator.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I don't know if it beats the Watchtower. That's pretty good.
Watchtower's up there, too.
What else do we have? My buddy Tommy says Slim Digits.
Slim Digits.
Meaning he's slim, he's skinny guy, and he's also yeah. a math guy. Slim Digits.
Slim Digits. It's dropping a mixtape. Slimmy Digits. I like that.
Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200. The call's coming in. Ivy Leaguer. 312 says Leaguer. Ivy Leaguer.
He, let's see. 630
reminds us that he's already been called a professor for a couple of years now, but we said at the top of the segment that that's not acceptable.
It's not
There's
acceptable.
Already a professor. It was Brad Palmer in town. He can't take the sportscaster's nickname. Sorry, Kyle, you're not from here. I know you're not from here, but you can't come in with something that everybody knows. It's like,
right.
I'm like, hey, I'm Justin. They call me Iron Mike. No, it doesn't work. You
right.
can't do that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey.
Air.
Hey, I'm Justin. My friends call me Sweetness. No, yeah, right. No, you can't do that. You're out. No, get a new one.
He went to Capistrano Valley High School. Some sort of play on the maybe the Swallows of Capistrano or the...
Okay.
Who knows?
Let's try Bill. Let's try Bill. Bill, what do you like for Kyle Hendricks? What do you got?
You read my text wrong. It's supposed to be the Calculator. Get it? Because it brings the thunder.
Oh, like a Thor.
Calculator.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
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 Thanks, Bill.
Calculator.
You got to do that when you give that nickname.
Absolutely.
Right? The Calculator Thor. Yeah.
God, he loves it the most.
Yeah.
All right.
So, okay. So, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. And we need a couple more Kyle Hendricks because the list, we could just go off the three. I love the idea of letting Esmeralda pick the winner. Last week, we kind of went around the horn. Each one of us gave what we thought.
Okay.
Esmeralda picks the winner.
All right.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to get in right before the deadline, we'll take this break and we'll come back. We'll do the winners. Stay with us. Kyle Hendricks, there you go. I'm playing Picnic here on the download, giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Kyle Hendricks and Javi Baez pretty much got our finalists, and we're going to let the team weigh in on what they think, and then Esmeralda here is going to choose the winner. 630, he's met Brett. He said, Brad Palmer, really? He's mad that I'm giving the professor the nickname that Kyle Hendricks has to Brad Palmer because it's Brad Palmer's nickname. Hey, I'm Justin. People call me the Red Baron.
Right.
I'm so... Oh, I can't use that? No, you can't use that.
No.
Hey, I'm Justin. People call me Zonk.
You're right.
Yeah. Right?
Hey, I'm Justin. People call me Mark Grace.
Right. Can't do that.
No. All right. Well, do we have any more for Hendricks?
Okay, let me see what we got. Not that we can read on the air.
Perfect.
I do like Ivy Leaguer. That's not a bad. Okay. So I'm going to add that to the list. Okay, since let's start with you, Pete. What do you like? Okay, here's what I got. Can I read the finals?
Yeah.
All right. These are in no particular order, these are for Javi Baez.
Mm-hmm.
Babyface, Flex, Apache, Bay, which needs to be read like Cat Williams. Gonna hit the ball to Bay. And he gonna throw over to first Bay. Who do you... How is that... Cajon Baez. That's so good. Hot Tamale. And Javi Nagila.
Mm.
What do you like, Pete?
I like Javi Nagila, but I don't know if I'm like cheering for him. I'm like, Javi Nagila. Right. I might go Babyface.
Babyface.
I'm going to go Babyface.
What do you like, Matt Klein? Matt Klein in studio with us. Babyface, Flex, Apache, Bay.
I like Apache.
You like Apache?
I think Apache. And I like how Rob dug for that. You know,
he did
some serious work on that one.
I think it almost gets into me, Apache, which is awesome with the research, it falls in the same problem Esmeralda was talking about earlier, that how do you explain to the person sitting next to you, why did you just call Javi Baez Apache? Well, he went to school at a middle school in Florida where the mascot was the Apache. It's hard. It's hard.
Oh, but in baseball, though, you have plenty of time to give the narrative. You have plenty of time to give a backstory.
Exactly.
That's what's great. No, seriously, that's what's great about baseball because that's have long periods of time where you go, all right, and Javi, the Apache Baez up to bat. By the way, the nickname Apache came when Javi Baez was, you know, I mean,
ball two.
Plenty of time.
There's a foul ball.
Yeah,
he steps off the rubber.
Yeah.
Right, it takes like 45 minutes to get a third inning. A couple coming in, 224, Kyle Hella Hendricks. And Kyle the Savior Hendricks, since Christian is his middle name.
I see.
And someone was angry with the Watchtower because I said that was a Hendricks, but it's actually a Bob Dylan song.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, come on, it's, I don't think that changes anything.
Yeah, I was putting
Hendricks for Kyle Hendricks, back to you guys. Kyle Hendricks, the Watchtower, the Calculator, the Calculator.
Yeah!
Or an Ivy Leaguer.
You gotta, you actually have to follow Calculator. Yeah!
I also wanted to add Cupcake and the Creeper to Hendricks.
The Creeper.
Wait, together?
No.
The Creeper Cupcake.
No, Cupcake or the
That's
Creeper.
That's just one nickname, yeah. The Cupcake and the Creeper.
Well, these were actual Jimi Hendrix nicknames.
Oh, they were?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I like Cupcake Creeper. Like, he's a creeper for cupcakes.
Could do that.
I think Slim Digits is pretty solid.
All right, we're at the end of the show, like, so why don't we give it to Esmeralda? Esmeralda, okay, so for Javi Baez, we've got Babyface Flex, Apache Bay, Cajon Baez, Hot Tamale, or Javi Nagila.
I gotta go with Babyface.
Oh, there
I
it
like
is.
The Javier Babyface Baez.
I think that's the best one.
All the
Babyface. There
Bay
you go.
Was was close second.
Did you like Cat Williams Bay?
Yes.
How are you telling me? Bay? Yeah, I told you to leave my house.
Okay.
You won? Okay. All right, I'll do my whole. We'll do a 1 hour special with Cat Williams tomorrow night. Okay, so Babyface, I like that. Babyface is the winner. For Kyle Hendricks, we have the Watchtower. We have the Calculator. We have the Calculator Thor. Calculator Thor, yeah. Ivy Leaguer and the Creeper.
Mm, what was that?
The first one, I think let's get rid of the other. The Calculator Thor. I don't know if that's going to work. I like the idea, but
the calculator's good.
I think it's the Watchtower,
the Abacus,
the Calculator, because he's tall, he's smart, he's a pitcher, he's not an overpowering guy. He's a very precise player.
Oh,
so, and his last name's Hendricks, so that's why we got Watchtower or the Calculator.
Right, I kind of like Calculator.
All right, there it is. Yeah. The Calculator.
All right.
Did it.
And there was a winner on the Calculator. Babyface was done by my buddy Tommy, so he's not going to get any of this stuff. But for everybody playing tonight, let's give away. What do you want to do? Do you want to give to the Calculator? Is on here. We'll find the Calculator tweet, and we'll give you one. And then, you know, just for the I will give the – just for the fun of it, let's give the Cajon Baez – let's give him the
2 3-day passes to the Festival of Pretension for the Cajon Baez.
Cajon Baez goes Cajon to Baez. Let's go give him the Builder Supply Outlet, and then why don't we give for I really do like Javi Nagila. That's really good too. So why don't we throw a pizza as an honorable mention to
pizza.
Javi Nagila. Matt Klein from the Cubs Fan Jam crew, good to see you. Thanks for being here,
hey,
man.
Buddy, my pleasure.
It.
My pleasure.
Esmeralda, great job. Great judging once again. We now have we have four nicknames, you guys. This is good. This is really good. All right, that's going to do it for tonight. Picnic next Tuesday. We'll pick two more Cubs, probably White Sox. Let's do White Sox. Do it next week. Thanks for playing. That's going to do it tonight. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Patty Vasquez up next with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We got two new nicknames. Babyface for Javi Baez and the Calculator.
With honorable mention to the Apache. Not going to let it go.
You shouldn't. You were robbed. You were Rob Martier.
They can't all be winners, Rob.
Yeah, I think
gotta give everyone else a chance.
I think that's probably what came into play here. It was just sort of like, you're just dominating, Rob. You're dominating this game, and everybody out there is it's just not fair. So
I think
Esmeralda was doing a solid for Download Nation, so
I respect her pick. That's fine. That's what the voters want.